coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody. How you doing? Episode 35. I want to thank you all. Everybody that has hung around since the days of Dudes and Beer. The reason I bring that up is shout out to former on-air co-host and studio member, promotion person extraordinaire for our former incarnation, Julie Connolly. Happy birthday, Sparkles. That shout out is for you. It was so great to see all the pictures from you and the kid and the wife visiting together in Florida. It was fantastic. But it's you guys. It's the listeners. It's all y'all that have stuck around. People like Julie, who was a listener before she came on. It's folks like y'all that have kept us around. It's folks like y'all that earned us that nice award that sits over my shoulder for Best in News and Politics. Make sure to go to the People's Choice Podcast Awards and vote for Curious Realm, folks. We are in the Best Male-Hosted Podcast category, as well as, I want to say, like, AV Production, and News and Politics. So we'll be getting to the News and Politics here in a minute, of course, with our News of the Week coming you from the Booking of the Face. But I want to let y'all know tonight we have our good friend Jared Murphy. I am holding up the original version. Everybody, ooh and ah. It's not aliens. Worse, it's us. This is the original version, folks. This is being released in a second format. With all kinds of great stuff. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about Jared's work and research over the last many years. Lost technologies, lost civilizations. The fact that it's not aliens, worse, it's us. And we have a tendency, even as a people, even as a country, to forget things in rapid format. We forget all kinds of stuff. We forget, as we'll mention in our pre-recorded segment later, that when they announced the Space Force, did we all forget that there was like an experimental unmanned plane over our head for many, many years? Like these drones and everything else that they're using in the Space Force have been in use for years. So we'll be getting into that after a commercial break with good friend Mike Turber from 5x5 News, as well as Exotic Materials, Exotic Technologies, and the new announcement of holograms that you can see, hear, and feel. Welcome the ushering in of many, many nefarious things possibly, but also amazing things, and that's what we'll be getting into. Some of these black budget projects, like Skunk Works and things like that, and the general technology that sits in our hand every day that we use because of them, and the mass folds of technology that come out because of those releases. So before we bring Jared Murphy on, let's, of course, hop on over here to the interwebs, see what all is going on. Thank you so much to our good friend and guest, and sponsor, Kimberly McGeorge. KimberlyMcGeorge.com is where you can go. SecretOfEverything.com is her website. It is the number one source for alternative health, frequency healing, and consciousness expansion exercises and therapy. Stop on by and check them out. Of course, big, big thanks to our good friends up in Pennsylvania, WebWorks Wireless. They're your home for unlimited, unthrottled, no credit check wireless internet, folks. I have been traveling with it. Anytime you see us out live, anytime you are watching on our website live, that feed is coming to you from WebWorks Wireless Materials. So it's pretty amazing. Sorry about that to some of our stream folks. Y'all were on mute. But it's incredible to see the technology that's out there, even to see the stuff from WebWorks Wireless, where many years ago I would get throttled doing Dudes and Beer episodes just with audio. Now I put up about 20 gigs of content a month, and there's no issues. So stop on by and check them out. Of course, check out TrueHempScience.com. They're your home for all kinds of great CBD. I use True Hemp Science CBD literally regularly. This is not a lie, folks. I use it daily. Chris is an amazing individual. It is produced locally here in Austin. Spigeric alchemical process. Every part of the plant, not just the bud of CBD, is used. So you get every possible benefit of the plant. Stop on by and check it out. TrueHempScience.com. Use the code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire order of $50 or more, folks. And help support us, help support them, help yourself get to a better place. Also, never forget, good Lord, lest you forget, stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is where you can get all the episodes. It's where you can find out all the updates. That is where you can find books from people like Jared Murphy. It's where you can follow all of the YouTube subscriptions of our guests on our video page, like Jared Murphy, as well as our upcoming guest, Mike Turber, in the second part of the program. And that's also where you can follow us on all platforms. All these little widgets over here are all the platforms. We're on all the alternatives, MeWe, Gab, Minds, Clout Hub, BitChute. Great results off Clout Hub, actually. Like, J.L. Carpenter, shout out to you, our regular guest and lawyer and legal consultant for the show. J.L. Carpenter of J.L. Carpenter Attorney at Law. For some reason, literally any time we post an episode with her, within an hour on Clout Hub, there's like 100 views. It's crazy. So stop on by and follow us there. And of course, that is where you can follow the Curious Realm page on Facebook. Stop on by and follow the page. That's how you will get all of the episode updates. That's how you will get all of the fantastic content, the live videos like what we are pushing out right now. Now with audio, folks, only 35 episodes in. Now we have audio with the show. It's incredible. Sorry about that little glitch, folks. I literally have about 18 buttons that I push to run and fire a show here. But while we're on Facebook, you know, let's go ahead and check out the news of the week. News of the week is, of course, brought to you by Facebook. And let's stop on by, check that out, see what some of the news articles and conversations going on this week are in the Curious Realm group. Let's see. Out of Odyssey, August 27th is the day some believe humans will be able to exit the, quote, matrix. According to Your Tango, if you come across the sequence 0010110 at some point during that day, you will be able to escape. I proudly posted my MUFON lifetime card there. And let's see here. There's Julie's birthday surprise. And out of space.com, solar storm from the hole in the sun will hit Earth tomorrow, August 3rd. So if you're having any kind of network issues with your phones, servers, things like that, that's probably the source, folks. ABCnews.com, Sandy Hook dad says Alex Jones made his life, quote, a living hell. You and a few other folks I know, bud. We are working on getting a couple of the Sandy Hook parents on. Alex is, of course, always has an open invite to this show to come on and defend himself, his actions, use the platform as an open platform to get a message out there, but refused every time. Imagine that. And a big, huge announcement out of SingularityHub.com, MIT researchers create artificial synapses 10,000 times faster than biological synapses. That is just some of the news that is fit to print. Over on the Curious Realm Facebook group, folks, make sure to stop on by, follow us there, join the group, follow the page, join the other many thousands of folks enjoying it. While you're online checking that out, make sure to check out the website of our guest, Jared Murphy. It's Not Aliens, worse, it's us. NotAliens.com. You can also follow him at Not Aliens on YouTube. Welcome back to the show, Jared Murphy. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's so nice to be back on. How have you been?
Doing fantastic. Doing fantastic. I am excited to hear that there is a new edition of your book coming out.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So very excited to hear that, because it's one of those few books that you get that actively has, like, images and pictures and diagrams, like, regularly. Not like, hey, yeah, we're going to give you an image, a chapter, or something like that. Like, there are regular charts and references. It's fantastic. It's a great piece of reference material.
It's really exciting that it's going to be in color, that... there's a lot more, maybe this is a negative, but there's a lot more information. So it's not just that it's in color. There are many more pages. It has been updated really well. It's been 8-9 months now of work, and it's going to coincide with me, and there will be tickets available in the next week to see me live at America's Stonehenge in New Hampshire in Salem, and that is the new book cover. So the Not Aliens Beyond Prehistory, Rescuing Our Advanced Past, will be available coinciding with my appearance at America's Stonehenge. The tickets and the details will be available on notaliens.com, up and coming in the next week. But I will be there September 24th, at just under, we're barely looking at 2 months.
Yeah.
And that'll be Salem, New Hampshire, America's Stonehenge. I'll be doing a 3-hour live lecture. You can listen online. You can listen via video. You don't have to come. There will be online video conference tickets available, or you can certainly come and meet me, and then we will go visit America's Stonehenge. Dennis Stone, the owner, of course, will be there. It's just pretty awesome that all this is coming together with almost a year's worth of work.
Wow, yeah, man. And Dennis Stone is a fantastic individual. I woefully did not have him on. Literally, like, solstice crept up on me. And the day of it, I was like, oh, my God, how did I not contact Dennis Stone? Like, I have him every solstice and every equinox. Like,
well, I was there. I was on site for the equinox. I was there with Michael from Dark Hour and Lynn from Rebellious Ufology. And so we were there filming because we're working on new documentaries and some, you know, refined footages of things that will be put out on Non-Aliens and those other channels. But I was up at 4 a.m. and on site for that. That was the, what was that? That was the end of June, beginning of July there. End of June. Yeah. So it was quite a time to be there at, you know, 5 a.m. I'm not going to tell you I'm a morning person.
It is an early one to be at. Most definitely. I have been to Groundhog a couple times, and that's one of those, like, yeah, wow, this thing's really, really early.
Yep.
So
if I can't make that communicated at least enough of the tone of my voice, I consider it a complete sacrifice that I was there at that hour.
But I would actually love to make it out to that. That would be wicked cool to go out there and see you speak on that and everything else. What, tell us a little bit. I don't want to be a ruiner or be a spoiler online or anything, but let's get into a little bit of what your presentation is. And that's one of the things that we love talking about with Dennis, is the fact that America's Stonehenge wasn't discovered by us. It was discovered by the local Native Americans.
And, yeah, that's true.
Like, when we said, like, whoa, what's this thing y'all built? They went, whoa, man, we didn't build that. Like, that was here when we got here, Jack.
Yeah.
So really phenomenal piece of American history. So let's get into some of that and some of the other that's in Not Aliens, It's Us, everything else.
Yeah, this lecture, you know, I was there almost 2 years ago, and this lecture is not specifically just, this is a good point. The lecture is completely independent of America's Stonehenge. The lecture will be about our ancient megalithic past, and actually it is, without spoiler alerts, does it have to do with the new book? Does it have to do with a little bit of the new documentary I'm putting out, because I put out one a few months ago called TerraCore. It's available on my YouTube channel on Not Aliens. But there is actually this 3-hour lecture is around new and continuing research about our ancient megalithic past. And TerraCore is there on the right. I think the full video is 38 minutes. So if you have your eyes on that one, I actually don't know if that's the commercial or the, the documentary kind of covers a little bit about what's going on for future field work with me. But the idea of this lecture would be is you'll meet us. There's an offsite location within a few minutes of America's Stonehenge, and I mean less than 10. And I will do a live lecture for 3 hours, and then we'll take a break, and then everybody will meet over at America's Stonehenge, and we'll do a site walk and hang out. And so anybody wants to come, there'll be a lot of good conversation. There was last time, and that was in the before time, in the sci-fi novel that we were all living in. And so this time it'll be different. It'll be hopefully a lot more open for everyone. Everything seems to be, in quotes, getting to normal. So that being said, one of the things that we're going to talk about, that I talk about in my book, is this ancient soil, Terra Preta, but how it connects to the human body and how there's a possibility of the machines and the technology wasn't just external, that it was biotechnology. And one of the things that we're going to talk about and do graphically is the real connections between different kinds of gene and genetic memories that have been stored, things that we might describe as paranormal. But we're also going to really get a little more into synesthesias and try to explain in graphics what that really means about what it would look like to be in a society that just may have well used music and sound and frequency internally within the human brain to project measurements and project cures and solutions that were likely vibration and frequency related for not just medicinal, but just living in color in a way where we use an external cell phone. You know, the idea is to mix photographs and, of course, me talking about it live, and for us to get into it a little more and give people a further visual outline of not what's just in the book or the upcoming documentaries, but really the vastness of what we once were is so difficult to, I think, for any of us to fully comprehend, because it involves our senses, it involves the physical world, and it involves a lot of things that, given each of our individual experiences, we may feel is spiritual or paranormal or sci-fi and UFO-y. So it really will be a lecture that kind of continues to pull it all together. So it won't be a repeat of the last 3-hour Stonehenge visit. It will be something new.
Well, and you know, it's interesting that you bring up this lost connection of man and society with the earth, and even with things like Terra Preta, stuff like that, which we'll get into in just a moment for those of you that don't know what it is. And that I think is really a good primer into this ancient technology that once again doesn't have to be aliens. Like we say regularly whenever we have Stephen Myers on the show from the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation, and hey folks, this is not to say that I am dismissing the possibility.
No, neither of us are.
That the pyramids were inspired by, that the dimensions were inspired by or given to, or that they were built to correlate to this? Absolutely. But is their use a tomb? No. If it was a tomb, whoever that is was meant to stay in there forever and never, ever, 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 ever get out. Because there is not a single thing on there talking about, like, hey, here's how you get into the afterlife, bud. Here's your spells to get it, to tell Thoth on your way out, that kind of stuff, and have your heart weighed so you can spend eternity in the afterlife as the God man that you are. None of that is in there. So it's really interesting. And to say that the ingenuity of humanity is not capable of it, period, is a little off-putting.
Yeah. It's again, there are space traveling anthropologists.
Sure.
And there is something that's wrong when we have such a very limited view of our past.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. When you table, again, giant archaeological game of Clue. So if you table all the very what appear to be unrelated abilities like second sight, or like you talked about just earlier about the skunk works and or the men that stare, we were talking about the men that stare at goats. The reality is remote viewing is real.
Yep.
It's not a woo-woo thing. It's a lost, I think, remnant science.
Yeah.
And, you know, without even getting into the particulars of that, there are all these pieces. When you table all of them, there is just too much to say that there isn't,
that it's random statistic that it's happening.
And right. And there's too many things, and so it covers the world of what we would call even biotechnology, homeopathic medicine, and the reality is that it's just the term that for some people might sound closer to home is intelligent design. There's all these words because the idea of our brains absolutely comprehending that this is a designed system. How do you get a chicken before an egg? You program one.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that anything that's egg-based was a programmed creation, that's just a side rabbit hole. But think about it.
Yeah.
There wasn't just a time where evolution hit a switch and went, you know what? You're going to you magically make eggs now. You know that?
Yeah.
Magically,
even though everything was based off single cell organisms in the beginning, amoebas, everything else, that randomly a multicellular organism is going to split biologically down the middle into two sexes and literally take the chance of maybe not procreating and living and surviving. Yeah, like that literally goes against everything that Darwinian theory tells us. Survival of the fittest.
It's so funny,
you're literally making yourself the weakest by doing that.
Yeah, and it's so bizarre because even Darwin had really, when you deconstruct even what he was talking about, it's a very minimal amount of what we credit to even Darwinism isn't even Darwin. And on the whole, when you table all the clues to your first point, to look at the pyramids, to look at polygonal masonry, to look at what we know in some cases via the father of geopolymers, Dr. Joseph David Ovitz, they've done studies from the Great Pyramid to Tiwanaku, and they know that some of these are ancient advanced concretes or geopolymers. And it's not just that a bunch of tribal people sorted out how to build it. It's that we have clues, as mentioned, for those of you who haven't heard before, there's a city off the coast of Cuba. It's 2,300 feet deep, about 1,700 meters, give or take.
Yep.
And no one's been able to manipulate that, if you think about it. It's so deep, it's so far down, that it has been preserved. And in my research and opinion, the last time that thing saw light was about 50,000 years ago at a minimum. And the theory is that it could have been faster and sooner. And there's our picture of it. This sunken city, for those who like conspiracies, why is it that allegedly, that I've not been able to verify this, but allegedly National Geographic bought the rights to the story and no one's done anything with it now. It's been, what, closer to 17 years, 18 years? No one's done anything. No one's done research. At some point, some geologists, shame on them, tried to call this natural, that it's not anything advanced, that it's not anything ancient. Unfortunately, it means that you have something that no one's looked at now for an extreme amount of period of time. So the discovery made in 2001. What they don't talk much about, this is a Canadian company, you know, Pauline and Paul here, they were looking for Spanish gold. They were given access by the Castro government to explore for, they were literally looking for gold. And I talk about this in not aliens. So this story is included. So at this point, it's been 21 years or 20 years based on the discovery, and nothing has been done with it. And what's important about it, again, it represents a continuation of the known global phenomena of pyramids. And of them, we're not talking mud brick dynastic, as in Aztec, you know, Maya, Egyptian.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't made out of adobe and hay, you know.
Yeah. It wasn't, it's not just basic mud brick. We're talking cyclopean blocks made out of very, again, piezoelectric stones. You know,
they're diorites, always, things like that.
And all sorts of granites and all sorts of quartzites and quartzes and things that you need for a computer, a worldwide computer network, an entire system that likely included biotechnology. But that being said, you have this example here of this one city that so destroys the relationship and paradigm I think we have with our, not only our known history, but to, again, to immediately credit our past to aliens, and then worse, to deflect it further. And I think it is nefarious to, if you know, to, for those of you who aren't Rick and Morty fans, there's a great episode, and I'm hoping most people watching this are Rick and Morty fans, but there's a brilliant episode where Rick has to fix the battery that is his basically spaceship battery, which is really a multiverse, which is really in a cube under his hood. And instead of just creating a nice, efficient energy way to do it, he creates a world, literally a world of beings that have no idea that Rick had created them, and all their lives. They live in an infinite universe, and their only real purpose is to power his car.
Yeah, yeah, to run like gerbils.
And so at some point it breaks, and for those of you listening, this is the point about aliens or UFOs that you see. Yes, there is a number of advanced clandestine military, absolutely very advanced things that we are unaware of. Two, Rick and Morty in this example that I'm giving you, it's a great episode because in order to go visit the planet within his battery, he tells his grandson to put little tiny dopey crappy dollar store party city antennas on. Like, it's just ridiculous. They're not aliens, but he goes, these people have to think we're aliens, so put these antenna on. And now we have enough genetic technology that there is a very sickening point, which is if our very advanced relatives survived in any capacity after a catastrophe, and if all they did was have to kind of grab their own technology, because if all we had left was a cruise ship of humanity, doesn't mean we know how to run forges, let alone mine, let alone program computers, let alone create computers or plastics or current healthcare. We may be aware of it, but it could take 5, 6, 10,000, 100,000, 200,000 humans surviving in advanced humans surviving an apocalypse. It could take them hundreds or thousands of years to recover and be able to have access to the physical technology. But at that point,
yeah,
part of it would be genetic. Like, we have access to gene CRISPR. So what I'm trying to tell people is, look, there are aliens, but Or a lot of people are willing to go, oh, well, there are advanced relatives, or they're from the future. It could be as simple, folks, as they are putting on antenna so that you think they're aliens to deflect from the fact that they are just not interested in you knowing that they could have cured cancer for you like a few thousand years ago, or your interest on genetics. You know, there isn't any requirement for an advanced ancient human to have not already modified their body for use with equipment that has 0 point turns at Mach 30. There is no point, because a human looks physically different, the automatic go-to in our programming of this last 120 years of Victorian education is to say, oh, well, they evolved. They aren't human, or they're part human. Okay, well, we don't even know, which brings us maybe back to just a side point. Why do we even know all the humans that have been on the planet right now?
Yeah.
Denisovan, Neanderthal, Dragon Man, the new, they, what, how is it that, how honestly did we go from We went from Dragon Man, Peking, you know, we had Peking Man, but suddenly we had Dragon Man and like three more humans found in Israel all over the course of like 3 months. How did that happen?
Yeah.
It was like a trend, like we're okay, we can release this data now. And no, and there was an article just out recently that showed a group of humans that they considered to have a certain point in a timeline. They've pushed back, you know, Lynn and I were talking about it a couple of weeks ago. It's at least a million years earlier. So you have elongated skulled Paracas, you know, alien looking head people. You have Denisovan and Neanderthals mixing with humanity, all based on genetics at least 50,000 years ago. You have different types of humans, including everything that we can think of, including Australopithecus and all the other ones, that simultaneously, which Michael Cremo seems to give a good, I think, very logical and direct argument that all of these human races were living simultaneously. They're not consecutive. They're not one after the other. They're not lineal. You know what? Don't move your screen. Because that ancient Peruvian skull where it says, oh, nope, don't scroll back. Nope, scroll back down. I'm delayed. So there's a plate there on that guy's head.
Yeah.
That's an inset plate.
Yep.
And as an example, that's someone who had brain surgery.
Yeah.
It is an elongated skull. And we don't even know what the material is that they used. Like that metal that's perfectly fused with a skull.
Yeah.
It's not like they poured hot metal into someone's brain. How did they do that? And we don't have an answer.
And that is not the only example of that. There are ancient Egyptian mummies that have had head surgery done, all kinds of things.
Yep. And none of it adds up.
Yeah. Yeah. It adds up to the fact of what we know now is really just a re-knowing.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, as we've said numerous times, and a prime example is just the idea of the Terra Preta. Let's get into that for a minute. And
sure.
The idea of kind of the rediscovery of it and the fact that not only does it occur naturally, but in some places it was purposefully deposited.
Yeah, there's always composting. There's, you know, trees cycling sure. through four seasons. But Terra Preta, you know, and this is, you know, is Amazonian dark earth or black earth. It's Portuguese. And the interesting thing is it's not like there's some guy out there doing plugs in the earth and saying, you know, we're pretty positive that this is the current estimate. When I wrote, it's not aliens. The current estimate was that there was an area twice the size of Spain in Brazil that had Terra Preta. So you have here's what's interesting for everyone listening. So it's this man-made, and by the way, yes, we're on a Wikipedia page right now, but there are many, many.
Absolutely.
And there are many, many papers about Terra Preta. Where what they'll list on the science review, what they'll do is they'll say, well, it's very interesting. Depending on where you go to see a scientific paper on it, what they'll do is they'll say, well, it seems to filter heavy metal. It seems to filter carbon dioxide. So everyone in the world that's concerned about carbon emissions, I think it's kind of funny that all over the world, from Siberia to America to South America, there's a man-made soil that filters heavy metal, and it also filters carbon dioxide. So who was on the planet, and what were they doing that they actually already thought to have a soil that not only can do all of this, that it can also grow and contain and or be at least be there for the plants growing in it, the most nutritious soil, that it can have the ability to transfer piezoelectric or basically frequencies and energies that could be either signals of communication or just energy. They could be connecting to the bacterial and fungal networks that would be connecting to tree networks that could be connecting also to these giant polygonal buildings. And then if you have buildings made of these diorites and quartzites and assorted other, again, lost, rusted, repurposed away exteriors or interior.
Absolutely.
And interiors, and not to mention multiple stories. If you have a society that, here's something that most people are lost on, the world was covered with that Cuban city that's underwater. This world was covered in a forest that were giant redwoods and sequoias. This society that's moving 1,000 ton blocks, not just moving, shaping and understanding the energies of earthquakes in the earth, they're shaping their buildings to counter move, to not fall down, but also not to move, but also they're understanding that they can build foundations and add soils that have multifunctional purposes over the course of the earth. And we're only picking up portions of it where soil scientists for 100 years have said, well, here's a bunch of qualities that make modern biochars, is what they call terra preta now, biochars. And they're like, well, we figured out some of it, and here's what some of it does. And some of the papers will say how interesting and how difficult it is. And a lot of what some of the papers will end with is, well, it's quite a mystery, and it'll take quite a bit more studying because, well, you can't actually, you know, at least in the mainstream, you can't actually say, well, it seems to be this, that, or the other, because it gets so far out there that it's an easy thing to suddenly lose your funding. If you, I would think in an academic setting, to get too far out there, you are risking your career.
Yeah. Well, and you know, just to loop the conversation back to about 3 or 4 minutes ago, that is one of the things that I found the most fascinating about the Remote Viewing Association conference, is that every, and I mean every single person, Jared, involved with the beginning of remote viewing, Russell Targ, Hal Putoff, Graf, Buchanan, like Brandenburg, all these guys, physicists, every single one of them. Hal Putoff is still read onto the U.S. UAP task force and sits on the To the Stars Academy board. Like, it's just phenomenal to be like, wow. And yet still here's a science that most people would be like, oh my God, you're crazy. Seriously, you want money to study ESP? Like, bro, these are physicists that have devoted the last better half of their life to this work and proved that it works.
Yeah, 100%. You know, Gary from Everything Imaginable, he has done the courses, and he and I, I only bring it up because we do.
I got a random number generator in the mail today. Buddy, I'm going to start sharpening my brain.
Well, the reason I'm bringing up Gary, one, he's a personal friend of mine. Mm. Two, we do work together. And three, I think I want to corroborate what you're saying about the fact that this is real, because Gary's done the courses with these guys and has learned how to do it. And I have listened in detail as they have remote viewed in groups. And here's what's crazy about it, folks. They're doing it all remotely. So they have, without getting into the system of remote viewing, for those of you not familiar, please check it out. But to agree completely here, I have gotten detailed descriptions of the things that they've remote viewed. Yeah. And it is scary and astounding. You need to stop and think, how are we genetically programmed that we live on a planet that's, I believe, in safe mode, like a broken computer that can only pretty much boot to the BIOS?
Ooh,
how is it that these lost engineered soils, these hacked bio technical programs that we might in quotes chalk up to nature, what is within our gene expression, what is within our genetic memories that we're tapping into on that, what is now 85 to 90% unconsciousness? What are these remote viewers doing that they are able to collectively as a group work together and literally witness and view something remotely? Yep. It is so not random. It is not a mystical thing. It's just science.
Like, none of these dudes are, I guess, even though it's in Menlo Park, California, none of them are fruits or nuts.
They didn't have beaded curtains that you walked through?
Let's put it that way. You know, like, I mean, it's just, it's phenomenal to sit there and think about that, like, because, hey, you get into ufology or anything like that, it runs the gamut, brother, from people like Travis Taylor, who is a physicist, an astrophysicist, things like that, Peter Robbins. There's all kinds of folks with all kinds of backgrounds. But man, specifically with this one, like every one of them, a PhD holding physicist, every one of them, and different realms of physics where it's like, I'm a theoretical physicist. I'm a particle physicist. I worked on directed energy weapons.
Right.
There's like, whoa.
Quantum mechanics has proved it out. There has been lots of interesting observations about quarks and observation of subatomic particles, even if they're particles.
Even the and we talked about this in an interview, even the quantum mechanical concept that an electron is intelligent.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to avoid all the other electrons that are swinging around? And not only that, but has to be intelligent in order to stop to be viewed by a camera.
Well, and therein lies
you ain't got a camera with a fast enough shutter to snap a picture of a moving electron. So, like, it has to know it's being observed.
Right. There is a there's a number of things that I know. I have a quote in my book. It's still there, even in this version, and it's Schrodinger himself saying, I'm sorry I ever thought of it. And he wasn't joking. But he wasn't.
Well, and you know, it's just, it's mind numbing to sit back and think about. I'm really loath to even mention this on air because I'm still in the process of working on the album, like personally. But I'll reveal it. It's an interpretation of petroglyphs from around the world.
Oh.
And specifically the tribal patterns within petroglyphs, the squares and triangles and spirals and things like that. And my concept is that these are actual physical representations of what the artist heard going on around them, and they were synesthetics. Even to loop the conversation further back, when you were talking about generations losing the concept of connection with the earth, gardening is a hobby now.
I know.
I don't think either one of our, and I don't know, and folks, don't get me wrong, like, though Jared Murphy is one of the many people who is the catalyst behind the change of name and concept of this show, and we talk privately, I don't know his family. I don't know his background, but I would venture a guess that your grandparents had a functional garden.
They had a farm.
Yeah.
Actually, see? Both sides.
Like, I don't know anybody my age who's going on 50, folks, whose grandparents didn't have a functional, like, they grew up in the Victory Garden era. Like, you had a garden, like, at least to go to the tomatoes or lettuce that you used or whatever.
We did. Yeah, you're right. My parents did.
And the idea of having that, like when you go back to ancient cultures, buddy, that wasn't a hobby. That wasn't something that you did to support your neighbor. That's literally something that you did to live day to day. So you cultivated and you cared for the ground and you had a direct earthly connection to it. You knew the cycles of where you lived. You knew where the game moved. Everything. You were so connected to the earth around you. You knew what the dirt tasted like, man, at different seasons. You know?
Not to bring it down for something negative, but I love these local farmer markets where on one hand it's like, oh man, I'm going to buy local. I want to buy something real. I don't want to get something that's been picked, not quite ripe. It's been ripened with gas and poison and et cetera. But you know, one of the things that's frustrating, I live in the Twin Cities, and there were a number of foundries and, of course, lead gasoline. And a lot of people don't know, there's a EPA program, and follow this, it's voluntary, but there's a number of neighborhoods in Minneapolis that can get all your topsoil removed. and they can bring in clean topsoil. And the old topsoil has, of course, lead, arsenic, and a whole bunch of things you don't want to grow your home garden in. So you have people, popular now, get chickens. They grow their own food. And I've, in my efforts in discovering Terra Preta, oh, wow, you found that fast.
It's like it used to be my job or something, Jared.
Like you know what you're doing or done it before. So I literally lived in a neighborhood and I watched them. And you can see here, just as you're scrolling, there was borax sub. Oh, man, the amount of chemicals and crap. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
What blows my mind is you'll have a neighbor in a tight packed Minneapolis neighborhood where they'll replace all their soil, but the neighbors haven't. And so what does that do? What's the point of taking out one person's soil when the soil next to theirs is bleeding in the very same toxins that you're growing what you want to be healthy food? And then they are 100% picking up some of those toxins. So for all of you out there that are considering growing food in your own home, one of the things that you said was a key point, being a caretaker of the land. And part of being a caretaker means you have to know what happened to your land. So before you go out and think you're being a steward by growing your own food, sadly, you may all out there find out that you live in a neighborhood where you legitimately should never use the soil that's in your very own yard. Yeah. And you basically paid for a home on toxic land.
Or even put an above ground bed connected to the soil to your yard.
No.
I myself, I was an apartment dweller for a long time, so my herbs, things like that, I grow in 5-gallon food grade buckets, so that in the winter I could like bring them into my second bathroom in the tub, you know, and just water them with the shower every day, and you know, all that kind of stuff, and they wouldn't die. And at that point, you're in total control of it, all that kind of stuff, and you know, like my grandfather was in the Houston Chronicle for growing like 48-inch daikon radishes, like huge monster radishes, like 3-4 times he was in the newspaper for that kind of stuff. And we have lost that kind of connection utterly and completely. And
we don't.
Like dandelions, just so you know, folks, you may want to go out and hit them with the Roundup, but honestly, let them grow. Let them grow in proliferation and leave them there for about 5 years. You'd be surprised what heavy metals you pick up out of your lawn, harvesting those things and throwing them away and leaving the root and letting them regrow. They pull heavy metals and toxins out of the soil. And then once your soil's clean, you can let them grow for a season and make dandelion wine, have dandelion greens in your salad like you're at some crazy expensive restaurant, all kinds of things. And they aren't full of toxins for you. But it takes like a good 5 years of rehabbing a lawn with natural processes like that. And even going back to the article that I had up about Terra Preta, seeing the fact that continuous cropping for longer periods of time appears to be possible from a soil fertility point of view. How long a field can be continuously cropped and what can be done to prolong this period is not yet clear. But Peterson et al., which is a study, reported that Amazonian dark earths and aquatuba were under continuous cultivation without fertilization for 40 years.
That should be significant.
Buddy, that's without crop rotation. And you wanna see something, folks? I challenge you to go to, while you're up in New Hampshire, make about an hour and a half trip up north from where you are to York, Maine, and go to the desert of Maine. It is the only desert in America east of the Mississippi, and it is a prime example of a place where a dude literally just let his sheep crop go awry and planted things and then let his sheep go and then planted things and let his sheep go, and the soil just turned to dust. Like, it is literally a desert that's like 2 acres by 2 acres. It's a state landmark, but it nothing grows there. It's wild.
That's fascinating.
But that happened like within 10, 15 years of a dude living there. So to see the fact that uncultivated without fertilization, like, or continuous cultivation rather, like what they're talking about, where it's not like you rotated crops like a normal farmer, where we're going to grow in this field for a year, and yep. then next year we're going to grow something else that puts this into the soil and takes this out, and we're going to go grow corn over there where it puts this in and takes this out, and then we're going to graze animals in this field this year. Like, that's a full-on farm rotation in modern world. And to know that these folks were quite literally continuously cultivating something without fertilization for 40 years, that's incredible.
Yeah. And that's just that they're using an example of just an area of Terra Preta. And the further you go down the actual scientific papers, the more you find what is truly, truly, truly incredible personalities of what it is. And it's 40 years and relatively manageable in what they've observably managed. They're not including dynastic peoples, as in people that the Spanish ran into the last 500 years of conquistadors doing, not 500 years, but the point is from the earliest visits of Europeans, this land in various locations were used on and off again for maybe thousands of years. And so the question is, was some of this Terra Preta, it's just a really complex, it is not a, for anyone listening, it's not compost that we forgot how to make. This isn't,
I'm sorry, and I know I'm interrupting you, and on occasion I interrupt a guest, Jared, but something that may not have crossed your mind before just crossed my mind, especially looping back to the concept of this soil being able to filter out heavy metals. Why did the conquistadors go to the Amazon Basin?
Gold,
silver.
Right.
Yeah. What do you use to mine gold and silver and remove it from the fixed ore? Mercury. What did Zachariah Sitchin say that human beings were genetically bred to friggin' mine? Gold.
Yeah.
So you would have needed something like, whenever you look, especially, I'm just going fractal here in my brain. but even looking at the river of mercury that was uncovered in the Aztec temple, the river of mercury that exists in the king's chamber in China?
Yeah, there is definitely dynastic works, but then there's also a mystery around, I think it does dial back to these larger megalithic structures originally being more energy frequency centers. So how they relate to dynastic periods, how they were ever survived or were refilled or mimicked or adapted for dynastic, in quotes, gods and solstices and equinoxes. I mean, we have this very mixed bag of post-biblical flood or post-Younger Dryas stories and abandonments and then reoccupations. And then you have cultures literally archaeologically or salvaging or quarrying from older buildings or disasters or earthquakes and then building with those. And we even sadly know this about the Egyptian pyramids, Tiwanaku, Pumapunku. I mean, just for name a few famous places, but it's well known that these places were literally used as quarries.
Oh, yeah.
So now we have, you're looking at this picture even that you've just brought up. There's lots of little stone. And how much, and then and mixed in there, you'll have these cyclopean megalithic blocks that, like, there's one to your lower right there for anyone looking there, at least from here. You have a very detailed, you have a large block, and then what? They were bored and they just used like 30 pound, 50 pound blocks.
Well, it was pretty much use whatever you have available, use some like coral based mortar in between them.
For that period, and then when they had a megalithic stone left, I think you have a perfect example in that picture of dynastic peoples taking piles of rubble from what was once a much older, more sophisticated building, or this is, the remnant of what is really just a completely period mimicked pyramid to something that was nearby that was megalithic in size and had more, again, megalithic blocks that again, it that's all that was left when they came across it 12,000 or 14,000 or 20,000 years ago. I mean, a lot of what we assume is, oh, the Younger Dryas is the cause and effect of the world disaster, and that everything happened, negatively, after that fact. Everything that arose here is in the last 4,000 to 5,000 years. Yet we have the Egyptians, we have the Mayans,
yeah,
we have the Olmecs, and we have a number of societies, and the Greeks. Everybody talking about how Hindu. There was once many, many thousands of years ago, the Vedic literatures, all pointing to hundreds of thousands to millions of years of human occupation and with, in quotes, the gods. So what we have to wonder is the Younger Dryas, just throwing it out for people, food for thought. Is it possible that biblical flood 12,500 years ago is really more of the aftershock slash final death note or crescendo or decrescendo of what was a much more massive problem if you were doing like Mount Toba as an example at 75,000 plus or minus years ago. What's interesting about that, there are some timelines that start to line up, which is Neanderthal and Denisovan. We know they right now, the standard academic answer is, in quotes, we know, and they like to be conservative. We know that Denisovan and Neanderthal and humans that we know of. Oh, mind you, a mystery human that we actually have no bones of, but there's another human. Yet, is it a mystery human, or is it those Paracas that none of you billion-dollar institutions want to test and give us an answer on? Anyone? Paracas skulls? Redheaded people? I find it beyond negligent that we don't have a full genetic makeup, and it's not daily news in any mainstream. It's shameful that they just ignore out of everything we're looking at. That I digress. But the idea of Mount Toba going off 75,000 years ago, and then the remnants of human beings, and like you're showing, like Yellowstone is a 60-mile diameter super volcano.
That's the next one, dude. Oh my sweet baby Jesus. The day that Yellowstone blows,
yeah,
like, I am just on the, whenever you look at USGS maps of what might happen, we're just on the edge over here where we're at. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there's 7 or 9 supervolcanoes, and, when we're talking like what we need to manage as a global society, I think is very different than what we're giving ourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
But I do think that when you start lining up genetic evidences of survivor peoples blending and breeding together, when you mix in a more accurate timeline with just Mount Toba, then maybe the nuclear winters and the catastrophic effect of Mount Toba going off perhaps is what was responsible for what was ultimately what we say, well, we're not positive why, but there seemed to be a lot of mile-high ice sheets, and everything was frozen, and everything 12,600 years ago suddenly heated up after being really in the dumps. We were really frozen up, and it was all, well, okay, well, what caused that? Was it something, in the last 1,000 years prior to the Younger Dryas? Or is it something that happened because of Mount Toba throwing the world into nuclear winter, and for whatever reason, perhaps again, just throwing out as an idea for food for thought on a timeline, if the Hindu Vedic literature is showing millions of years of human history, and they're talking about, in quotes, the gods fighting, why are we not considering the fact that a variety of human races and or one global society had a falling out? They, after managing for maybe hundreds of thousands or millions of years, pressure release valves globally, that they were able to keep super volcanoes from going off. What if what we're looking at then is after a weaponized nuclear / weaponized global disaster between a worldwide culture, are we looking at a sunken city off of Cuba that represents an unlimited amount of other sunken cities that represent a very advanced, that city right there could have Terra Preta in it, and there are a million more that could be like it, and the remnants of it are either underwater or in dust, in molecules of dust, which we now have sedimentary nuclear DNA testing. And the reality is that 75,000 year ago volcano may have only gone off because the people who managed it for hundreds of thousands or millions of years prior well, they fell out with themselves. Maybe they even left the planet. And the reality is, just to keep our heads on one idea, the Younger Dryas is really the net of this super volcano causing a nuclear winter and the catastrophic events of flooding and tidal waves that would have been miles high. And this is what we end up with. We end up with the Younger Dryas being a quickening, really, of what isn't another disaster. It's a disaster in the sense that it was the final thawing of what was a remnant of something that had happened at that point 63,000 years earlier with Mount Toba. And here it was, the final melting and the final recovery, in quotes, recovery of the Earth, which, of course, by then we've literally in the Stone Age. And what do we have? Well, we have these dynastic societies, which are survivor cultures. They were not in the fancy rock-cut ruins that were underground that are found all over the Earth. They're not the advanced humans that may have just been users of advanced technology, but like indigenous groups in the West, just in America alone, they talk about the ant people bringing them underground, helping them, saving them. We have remnants of rock cut ruins in the West that exactly show that there could have been a chance of many humans surviving. But here we are, post Younger Dryas or post Mount Toba, of maybe some cities being rebuilt that were more advanced by people who didn't control the technology that they used, but were familiar with it. And that's maybe where we get that Atlantean story, where there's an observation of survivors after Mount Toba that nobody knew they would survive because they weren't in those large underground advanced rock cut ruins that were part of this advanced society that were housing hundreds or thousands or more. And then you have these yeah. groups of Denisovan and Neanderthal and humans and mystery humans that survived, but they weren't part of this advanced group. And so they witnessed some more advanced cities. And maybe, again, when you start tabling all the slivers of truths, what we really have is a more complex but very exciting past yeah. with what could easily be UFOs that we look at now as not being foreign anthropologists at all, but being very unsharing, maybe very selfish, and definitely not positively motivated ancient humans that have left us to struggle or keep us where we are at. I mean, one of the side thoughts, I guess, I'm not
or
trying to...
Or humans from the future trying to steer us in a direction.
Well, and there's the thing. My question always is, why here? Why now? I love that we're like, mm-hmm. obviously the most important period is where we are, you know, yes. it ain't the Industrial Revolution, you know, they're never going back in time except to where we are. And, you know, it's like, hey, remember when they're going to get the iPhone 12? That's when we're going back in time. That's the one they need. Not the iPhone 1, not the Industrial Revolution and Ma Bell, not Edison. You know, they're going to go back in time and save us just coincidentally when we are now making movies. You know, don't you always find that fascinating?
Yeah.
They're always going back in time now. And my other favorite, this one's very simple for people, is aliens need gold. Really? Because yeah. you know what a 3D printer is? You know, we've covered this for some of you on the show here, but honestly, if you can control subatomic particles and create, right now we're all trying to create quantum computers, and we're getting there. We're getting there fast, and it's going to open up a whole new world for all of us. But on our way, you're talking about the study of spintronics. So taking those electrons and spinning them to not just be a one or zero like a regular computer, but have many, many positions that normal computers don't, hence spintronics. And so in a future where you have control of subatomic particles, for everyone listening who's not familiar, if you want to make gold, you just combine a couple atoms and you make gold. You don't need to go mine it.
Yeah,
you don't need
to
mine anything.
Yeah, you don't need to strip mine anything. You don't need to go and get a bunch of ore and break it down with mercury. Once again, that's why I wanted to rabbit hole that thought that just ran through my head that I cannot believe that I have never, ever, ever heard from any talking head on any show.
Yeah,
When they talk about the rivers of mercury under the temples and the uses of mercury by ancient civilizations and how it was revered and everything else, like, how about how it was used to extract gold?
Yeah.
And yeah, just once again, the fact that if this, even if, even just to marry these two ideas together, real quick, the idea that you're talking about of this soil, this terra preta being piezoelectric because of the quartzite and quartz properties inside of it, and that translates over to the temples that are there, that would only be amplified.
Yep.
And, by the mercury underneath the temple. So yeah, even taking advantage of the fact that, hey, look, we can farm 82 feet away from this temple that has like a river of mercury underneath it, but none of us die from mercury poisoning.
Yep. And there's got to be multi-layered purposes.
That's what happened.
Like, it's just fascinating. Like, why would they know what to do with it, but they wouldn't know how to handle it and not die from it?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Exactly.
Different groups of people adapting it and mystifying it
across the globe.
Yep.
From the Greeks to the Chinese, who may have been in contact. You know, there's land possibility there from Mycenae and Eastern
genetically. You got those redheaded mummies in Mongolia that are all on trade routes thousands of years sooner than they're supposed to be. So I think.
And the redheaded giants that the Paiutes were all about.
Well, and what are we doing with camels? They're from North America.
And for some reason, we were all hunted as witches at one point.
Well, I can feel it's true about you, but I don't think I'm a witch.
Oh, I have a soul. I have more than one. One for every freckle I have.
That's
how many I've harvested.
Oh, do we out you as a soulless ginger now? Is that it?
No, I own numerous souls, Jared.
Oh, well, that's what they tell every ginger.
That's what all these freckles are. Everyone's a soul I've harvested.
That makes more sense, you vampire. That's exactly right. He's outed now on this episode,
that's
folks.
Right. That's right. But the thing is, that is exactly how easy it is to do something like that. The idea of that I busted. Now, granted, the idea of the terra preta and the sacredness of mercury and its uses, even if used to get gold, which was the metal of the gods, according to every single ancient religion, and culture. Because it was used to get that, probably very, very revered, very, very treasured, and you would need a way to store it without contaminating the world around it. Like, a river of mercury would, but like, if it was just in a straight, like, hey, here's a dirt trench, let's fill it with mercury.
Doesn't seem like a good way to go.
No. I mean, imagine everybody with Hatter's Madness. Like, it's one thing to imagine the possibility of, like, the Salem witch trials having come from ergot rot, and maybe everybody was having an LSD trip that year, you know? Well, possibly.
But do you want to slow it down for people who don't know how Mad Hatters became Mad Hatters?
Yeah, yeah. Mercury was used as a fixative for the felt, folks, and there was only one way to make sure that the hat was the right size. The hatter knew his own hat size. So using his own head, he would put it on and make sure, like, okay, it's at least here is a base. Now let's make it bigger.
It was arsenic also, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And so the
all
Mad
kinds
Hatters,
of horrible things.
I mean, and they're literally absorbing this through their skin, and hence you have the Mad Hatters.
What was it? Thaline blue.
Was another
mercury base. And even how, man, to say that mercury isn't used now, there are mercury-based fixatives used in V-words that you inject into people. I'm not even going to use the word in conjunction with mercury because I know the algorithm will catch it and mute this whole episode, literally.
Right.
So those solutions out there, folks, some of them have, like, mercury bases in them to help preserve them for longer time. So mercury is something that has been long known
And it's unfortunate that we I think, to circle back on one of your, I think, super important points for everyone who's doing the research on this, is that we go at this at 10 to 15% consciousness. Mm-hmm. So, and we can't help but apply these very primitive perspectives on our origin stories and even the origins of our ideas. So for a long time, we understand the mechanical process of mining. We did not understand subatomic particles. We did not understand electrons or even the theoretical electron. But the reality is we don't, again, barely we're grasping that we can take subatomic particles, make a particle like gold, or change the human form. Like, we don't quite grasp that you out there listening can find a gene CRISPR and start doing your own Dr. Island of Moreau and, you know, Frankenstein experiments. Yet
we have made matter from light, brother.
Yep. And
literally, that's up on screen right now.
There
you
go.
That was in the last year. That is two steps away, as I say in the pre-recorded segment coming up, from Replicator, give me an espresso.
There you go. Scientists generate matter directly from light. And so,
like, predicted 80 years ago, more than 80 years ago by the laws of physics.
And this is just, it's easy then to get carried away with, you know, there's aliens everywhere, and our human history is fraught with really just generous alien Peace Corps that came to Earth in groups and helped build pyramids around the planet, but stylized them based on their, you know, high school from Intergalactica, and, you know, helped make Chinese pyramids, and Aztec pyramids. I mean, it's just lunacy.
I want to give people a grasp of what we're talking about here, technology and time wise, and how easily this can get lost, my friend, because once again, 80 years ago, it was predicted that we could make matter from light, and now we have done it. The general theory of relativity of Einstein was developed in the years between 1907 and 1915. For less than 100 years, we have been working with the concepts of quantum and theoretical physics in that way. So, yep. In less than 100 years, we have come to the point of literally parking a telescope at a predestined point in space, way far away from where we live. In less than 100 years, we have come to the point of quantum computing, come to the point of robots in real life, in everyday life, to the point of therapy. Everyday life.
Handheld LiDAR.
All of this is stuff that, like, man, when I'm on the road, brother, I listen to, like, old school radio dramas. It's an addiction. I love them. Love them. Especially the old, like, sci-fi stuff, things like that. World of Tomorrow, that kind of stuff. X-1. And there was one on X-1, and I want to say it was, like, episode 8. Where quite literally they were talking about a computer. Now, this is like 1948.
Yeah.
They are talking about a computer that is made to store data and write data on atoms.
There you go.
We do that.
Genetic memory.
We do that. It's called quantum computing.
Yeah.
It's crazy. To know that, like, in 1948, and once again, general relativity, 1907 to 1915 was when it was developed till when it was finished. And we are still proving, none of it is law. It's all still theory, but we are still proving all kinds of things like Einstein-Rosen bridges, all kinds of stuff that was once just science fiction. We talked about DS9 and a wormhole to somewhere else that was stable. Actual possibility.
What about Tesla? I mean, we're finally getting to the point where we're admitting that despite some predictions or some of the work that we're, in quotes, crediting to Einstein, you have Tesla's exact quote of, Einstein was nothing but a fuzzy-haired crackpot. And you have Steinmetz, and you have all these people that have been almost forgotten, including Tesla, doing the real work at the Edison Labs, where Einstein was just a visitor. And you have someone like Ken Wheeler out there who I just think has been tremendously helpful for those nerds interested in really like banging the bell or the drum about the true center of our scientific universe was we used to discuss the ether. The ether was the way we described the quantum, the existence of the space between our very breaths and the existence of anything and everything was described as ether.
Yeah.
Then the conspiracy out there world, for those of you tuning into conspiracies, we stopped calling it ether. And then we started perpetuating this guy, Einstein. Meanwhile, you have possibly the most brilliant human being alive that we know in our times, Tesla, literally calling this guy, he's a fuzzy-haired crackpot. His theories are literally, they're draped in purple and they mean nothing and they're not what it really – you have Tesla saying this. I think we should pay attention. And not to discredit Einstein, but what is the highest and best, most evolved theories to get to using quantum computing and all these different frequencies and energies? And I think we have a lot to learn from these existing these pioneers. I think that there is directions that Steinmetz and Tesla were already headed down that really indicate, I think the fruition of it now is just a validation of not only these sci-fi shows that you were already like,
oh yeah,
kind of geek. You know, there's just this amazing amount of genetic memory.
Man, we just really, really, really tend to forget as people the rapid progression of things, not only by society, but scientifically. And when you marry those two things together, my friend, you get something that is beyond anything else. It is a true rapidness that occurs. And even the work of Petrie, who worked with anthrax, things like that. That was like,
oh yeah,
because you were talking, it popped into my head because you were talking about ether. One of my favorite references ever. And at that point, until the work of Petrie with anthrax, it was the four humors. It was like black bile, yellow bile, phlegm, and I forget what the other one is.
Gross.
Yeah. It was like four gross things, and that's what ruled your life. And depending on, like, hey, yeah, you know, if you had a liver thing, you had more yellow bile in you, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's all that they knew was there were these four humors. And that's like from the time of like freaking Aristotle to
yep.
to literally the time of Petrie in like 1880. Working with hoof and mouth disease and stuff like that and getting rid of anthrax in cattle. And he was the person who accidentally discovered penicillin and stuff like that. Like, he's who petri dishes are named after, for crime and he's sake.
We're not operating at a high level of consciousness.
Well, it's just the fact of our level of consciousness is so entirely friggin' recent, Jared. Yep. So entirely recent. When you're talking about a native culture, when you're talking about an aboriginal culture, an unchanged culture, like for instance, exactly the Aborigines, even Native American cultures, where these people's stories have been unbroken for tens of thousands of years, their knowledge of the world around them and of the fact of, oh, I'm sorry that you can't find water right now. I'm going to go out there into the desert for a couple of weeks. I'll see you later.
Yeah.
Because they know where to find water in the middle of the desert. Because their people have been finding it for tens of thousands of years in the middle of the desert that time of year. Like that cultural knowledge that still exists that we, even in our lifetimes, Jared, have lost that connection to the soil. That intimate connection to the soil and of how to foster that life and how to literally pull it from the soil underneath your feet.
Yeah, and the connection, the scary part, which would take a whole other show and a whole other conversation, is
but let's do it.
How we will, because how would the connections between those viruses, bacteria, the soil, the connections to our very consciousness, how has it been bioengineered? How is it, how are the ones and zeros of it connected together? There are ones and zeros. They are biotechnologies.
Yeah. Yeah. And even, you know, it's one of those, most discoveries are not made with, I wonder how. They're made with, whoa, what was that? you know, it's an accidental. It is a, whoa, that was interesting. You know, and that's what leads down the path. So even to think of it in that way, of if our ancient ancestors realized that doing this with soil and carrying this way for soil and making it to where, you know, quite literally, as it says in that abstract, once again, to be able to be used for 40 years of continuous cultivation without fertilization. That right. In of itself, without the piezoelectric properties, which is like, yeah. What?
Or filtering heavy metals.
Or filtering heavy metals, which is like, oh my God. Like, why is that not inside of every single water filter out there right now?
Right.
But even to think of it in the fact of you can farm it for 40 years, like...
Just those
think about
people.
It, think about,
just those people.
Think about how many people you know that are like, you know, man, I'd love to have a fern, but I can't even keep a cat. Like, right. You right. know, like...
How nutritious would it be?
Yeah, like, they call themselves having a brown finger. Like, they know how to kill things. If you give them a plant, it will die. I love you, Mom. but, you know, it's one of those, like, yeah, there are some people that have a knack for that and some people that don't. But to know that they've literally engineered a soil that once made and maintained... to the point of it being terra preta.
Self-replicating.
It's self-replicating. And does its own biomicrobe thing. And yeah, that is utterly, when you're talking about especially mycology, stuff like that, which is really what true terraforming and things like that, like what make rainforests and huge moss-covered rainforests like in the Northeast. It really is that AWA concept of there is a nerve network of fungi underneath the ground that are all connected to each other and all talk to each other. And there is literally a language between all of them that keep them all fertilized separately and keep them moving and cycling and going.
It's cross amazing. Species.
Yeah.
They're cross species, the tree to tree and also viral to fungal and bacterial. Mm. There seems to be a very organized system that, again, the more you table all the facts, the harder it is to not say that this isn't a biotechnical system.
Yeah, yeah. And absolutely cooperative with each other, too. Those fungi are not parasites to the tree roots that they live on.
No. There's some very odd, and again, it's unnerving because it's not random.
Yeah.
And it is connected. And... Oh, also going circling back on your subatomic particle and observing it and the particle, or at least the subatomic particle acts the way it's observed. We're literally talking about controlling something, consciousness and the remote viewing. So we've proved that you can, whether it's praying or consciously sending good vibes, it's been well proven in multiple experiments within academic settings that prayer or whatever good intention you have over a seed. I have a friend doing seed work right now and growing quite intentionally, looking at 2 and 3 times growth rates compared to another grower of just some, we're just talking basils and tomatoes and a mango tree and a few other things where the seedlings are behaving based on the mindfulness over the seed from pre-growth to sprouting, they're actually performing 300 to 400% better with that direction of consciousness. So us at our 10 to 15% consciousness level in a mindfulness towards, well, I want this seed to unpack itself.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, we're doing it.
Think about these locations with Terra Preta, these temple locations, who once again, you know, River of Mercury or not, were literally right up against where the people planted and lived and did everything. It's not like they walked tens of miles to get to the center of worship.
No.
It was right up against where they lived and where they cropped. And to think about the fact that once again, like you said, intention, prayer. We're a bunch of distracted, monkey-minded people.
Yes,
no,
we are.
No joke. Not even, folks. I love you all. I love myself. I love you, Jared. But we got fidget toys in this world, man, because we don't know what to do with our brain. You know what they didn't have time to do? Not farm.
Well, they had drugs.
Sure. That were used for sacred purposes. They didn't like, there wasn't like medical or recreational or anything like that. It was used for sacred purpose, that kind of stuff, maybe to relax in the evening. But hey, man,
I like that.
Hey, they farmed. Like, it's kind of like the concept of, okay, so 80% of modern crop circles, 95% fake, totally. 5% that aren't?
Yep.
What about that? Not only that, they go back to the 1500s. You know what they didn't have time to do then? Destroy half a town's wheat crop.
Right.
Just to make a wood carving for the year.
For funsies.
To make that year's wood carving for the village. Oh, look at that. You remember the devil circle? Wow.
Yeah.
No.
Corn maze.
Not the fact.
Corn maze.
You know, yeah. Oh, let's make a corn maze, everybody. Oh, my God. Let's destroy all this food.
It's all right. It was grown in arsenic.
Yeah. So.
Arsenic corn.
It's one of those, like, but when you talk about the focus of it, and when you talk about a focused population of a couple million people, who live their hands in the dirt and are connected to it with the feet every single day, and they are going to worship their God, who is going to help them fertilize this seed that they just put in the ground yesterday, buddy, that's a different world of intention.
It is, even if you're manifesting in the ether.
You don't even need Terra Preta to make that happen. But if you got the Terra Preta and the piezoelectricity and the connection and everything else to begin with,
from bacterial to fungal to tree.
Yeah, exactly. It's remarkable.
I would tell people to think of trees, for those of you who want to go out on a geek limb, and consider trees basically errant or erroneous programs that have lost their programming. So what you think of as a tree is just really an undefined subroutine that is just popping up because it's not being told how to grow or what direction or how to shade or what thickness or what shape. I'm not saying it's going to grow into a car and drive away. But I think that, you know, based on, especially in the world of vibrational medicine, and we look at what we've figured out about biology of like salamanders and the way they regrow limbs and the study work that's been done on that. We're really going out, we're kind of covering everything right now, folks. We're on a roll. Just let us go. But that whole idea of, again, biological one and zero switching, and there are these descriptions that are coming along that are showing up in scientific papers where, like, well, what we're observing is almost as if it's ones and zeros, as if it's a biomechanical system doing one and zero work like a computer. And then we will throw the word sacred in front of geometry, yet what if what we're looking at are designed systems? And again, some people will say, intelligent design. Again, listen to the slivers of truths and all of our past histories. And the reality is, this is a good one. I haven't read the article, but if you're going down the purr thing, it's quite interesting.
Because these are ranges of sound, folks, that are, when you're talking 25 to 100 hertz, Let me give you a prime example. I'm an audio engineer, a geek. You can see right over my shoulder here is an actual oscilloscope.
All right.
The typical range of human hearing is 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, or as you'll see on most headphone ratings, 20Hz-20kHz, everybody. Now, when you're talking about a cat's purr being at 25, like, you'd have to have really good hearing to actually be able to hear the lower range of that. You'll normally hear the higher range of their exhale, but what you'll feel on you is that 25 hertz, that bass range, where it's like...
Yeah,
and that's what you feel instead of hear. Just to give you an example. So, yeah, to know that these piezoelectric properties exist, stuff like that. And for those that don't know, let me grab you a quartz crystal here. Here's a piezoelectric crystal. If I wanted to get off camera and unplug my earpiece, I'd hop over and grab you a piezo, which is basically a very small slice of crystal wedged in between two pieces of metal. One piece of metal is negative, one is positive, and whenever a vibration hits that, the quartz vibrates and generates a small amount of power that generates sound. This is how piezoelectric microphones in your cell phone work, things like that.
Well, what do you think of the something that rarely ever gets associated, although it's a point, is, isn't it odd that crystals can be grown?
Oh, yeah. I used to grow them as a kid. I'm getting ready to show my kid how to make rock candy. That's my favorite one.
But isn't it fascinating that you can grow them and there's growing rocks around the world? And we don't know why.
Yeah.
But why and how? Why would it be important if you think of all the high-tech applications? Why would it be convenient and important for crystal to grow itself?
Yeah.
Or to manufacture it in a particular structure.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like the whole idea of Jack and the Beanstalk, except when you drop the seed down, it grows the pre-programmed building computer energy machine.
But yeah.
And it's very fascinating that I know there's been a joke before about like one of these days, one of the great pyramids will turn on and you'll just be able to, download
One of the beacons in the obelisks will activate and
right.
But so just, it's interesting because like one of my favorite minerals, I'm a huge rocks and minerals fiend, is fluorite. I love fluorite, and the main reason is, I mean, quartz is beautiful, but you really do have to get down to the anatomics, the atomic scale to start seeing the hexagonal structure of quartz, on the typical, to see that it's made of hexagons that make hexagons that make hexagons. But when you look at specimens of fluorite, it is truly this like fractal world of cubes make cubes make cubes make cubes. And it's really phenomenal. Like I've got a piece in my collection outside that is a large square that's very, very much similar to the one on my screen right now, folks, where it's a cube of cubes. And it's just so entirely mathematical and beautiful and simplistic. And mine goes down much finer in grain than that. To where you can literally see like one cube is made of like 20 cubes is made of 20 cubes. It's made of like, it's crazy. It's just this beautiful fractal of math that's going on inside of this natural thing. And when you start thinking about that, when you start thinking about, the way that quartz vibrates, different minerals vibrate, that kind of stuff. Even here recently, after having Eric Rintamaki from uperlights.com on, he gave me an awesome UV light, and I ended up I was going to build a UV cabinet of minerals and ended up that I had a crap ton of minerals that were already UV active. I just never had the right UV light. And some of them that I saw were self-luminescent after phosphorescence. And those were specifically minerals that I gathered out near Marfa, Texas.
Okay.
Like where you see the Marfa lights. And it was one of those, like, you hold the UV light on it for about 20 seconds, and then you cut it off in the dark, and the rock will still glow.
Okay.
For like 15 seconds. So it was one of those, like, wow, are these lights literally just small deposits of this that have been charged all day long and are being moved around by air differentiations in the desert, like a mirage, and being moved around? So, yeah, yeah, things like that where it's like,
wow,
sure, sure, not aliens, but no, maybe something geologic that might be there. You know, even going back to the concepts of ancient Greece and the ideas of the Oracle of Delphi, and so, which was rarely wrong, mind you, rarely wrong, the Oracle of Delphi. However, apparently a whole bunch of people just huffing natural gas for years, that's what they found.
Could have been the Mediterranean diet.
It could have been. Could have been. Olive oil is good for you. But it was, it's one of those, like, are you willing to accept the ordinary and accept that there may be an anomaly within that? And that's what we need to investigate, is the anomaly.
Right.
You know, and we need to be willing, like the crop circles, to say, sure, okay, 85%, 90%, poop stick, whatever, you know? But what about just the sticks? Like, we need to be willing to examine them. We need to be willing to step forward into them. We need those so many Magellans, Jared, that are willing to say, okay, so 80% of you think it's flat? I'm going to take 15 other dudes, and we're going to go that way until it isn't.
Right. You don't need it to prove it out. You can prove out the qualities and characteristics of something you've experimented on.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, there's been enough experimentation to show that the world as we know it is not what we think it is.
Absolutely.
That it is much, obviously, it's not that it's a mystery that's yet to be uncovered. It's literally something way more unifyingly complex.
That's
not
right.
Just randomly complex, complex, but unifyingly complex.
Yeah. There was most definitely not only an ancient trade route and an ancient communication and an ancient connection, but an ancient shared knowledge amongst societies. And we need to do a whole episode on that sometime, my friend. I want to thank you for coming on, as always. I can't wait. When is the new, and for all of you that don't have the original copy of It's Not Aliens, Worse, it's Us, you, I'm just playing. You should have gone out and gotten the first copy.
No, wait for the new one. Everyone wait for the new one.
It's going to be way better. Don't go out and get the old one.
No.
Don't do
it's
it.
It's in color. The new one's in color.
The new one's in color. Believe me, I'll be getting it. But it's one of those, like, hey, yeah, you know, it's kind of like I got that copy of Two Live Crew, As Nasty As You Wanna Be, that they recalled. And we're like, hey, everybody, the bump is for their kids. Send it back. We should have never let that hit the shelves. Still
never.
Have it. So yeah, I'm proud whenever I have things like a banned material, material that people are like, you know what? I need to get the second version of this out because the first version was, I need to redo it. I need to retool it. There is so much more new information, new data, and I can present it in so much better a way. And I cannot wait to get my new copy of it. Where can everybody go to keep up with you, to find out, to join your mailing list? Where can they go to find out updates on the release of the book? Where can they go to watch Terra Core, our ancient past? All that good stuff. Shameless self-promotion time.
Well, the reverse on it is to see TerraCore, it's going to be on Not Aliens on YouTube. There's certainly a link on notaliens.com. On notaliens.com, you can go there and you can actually just stay tuned. There's going to be an update of the website. So the formatting, the actual website is changing. Episodes of TerraCore is on the right there. You just scrolled by it. And then it's with the little kid there on the, you used to be able to stand it. They weren't too worried about Stonehenge for some periods.
Yeah.
And just stand on it. The lecture that I'm going to give, again, it's not specifically on America's Stonehenge, but it's at America's Stonehenge. It is about the new book and new research and continuing this dialogue, but in person for 3 hours. Then there will be on September 24th, same day after the lecture, there will be a tour of America's Stonehenge. Coinciding with that, starting about 2 weeks sooner, about mid-September, pre-sales for the digital and for the physical copy of the new book will be available in September. You're actually the first show that I have talked about it on officially.
Oh, that's awesome.
There we go.
That's right. That's right. We're a show of many firsts like that. So thank you so much. I appreciate that. I can't wait once again to get my new book. I need to talk with you as well as Dennis Stone. And check my schedule.
He's a wonderful person.
And see if I can't come up there and maybe we can do like a live stream episode or something like that before or after your presentation. And maybe I can come up there and just, you know, ask like a 5 minute long question that leads down a 20 minute long rabbit hole and just totally derail you during the Q&A.
Because
that's what's a friend for, Jared.
Hey, that's why I'll have Michael from Dark Hour tackle you, or
that's right.
I'll just
that's right. Have another host. Hey,
look
there
at the crystal.
Security.
Look at the crystal. Come over here, Chris. Look at the crystal.
Yeah. Come here and check out this quartz.
Ooh, look at the microphone. Look at the mic. Look at the audio quality.
So I want to thank you as always for coming on, man. It's always a great conversation. Having you on, we always tend to really get down to the nitty gritty of what is missing, I think, in some people's fractal view.
I don't think we get there if you and I I value our dialogues because I do think that between the two of us, we go a lot of places that hopefully people will enjoy looking on their own.
Yeah, well, and it's also the point of being able to build upon each other and even see things from a different point of view and have new points of datum that are thrown in there. So,
you know, based on that, I'm going to have to put at least one book out that says could be aliens.
It could
might be. Not
be
us.
Could be aliens. Good God, I hope it's not us.
All right.
Edition 3. Once again, Jared, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I greatly appreciate it. Take care of yourself. We will definitely talk soon. I will let you go as we sign off here and move on to our commercial break and our sponsors. Thank you as always for responding to the call and for coming on. Can't wait to have you on again soon, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Good night.
While you're online, everybody, checking out all the work of Jared Murphy, as well as TerraCore and It's Not Aliens, It's Us. Make sure to stop on by. Curious Realm, CuriousRealm.com is the website. That's where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can follow us on social media. That's where you can find our store. Having a little bit of a hiccup right now with some of the Amazon coding. Don't know what's up with that. But we got plenty of merch, plenty of great stuff. Stop on by there, folks. We will get back to you after these messages. Stay curious. We'll be back here in just a second. We'll be right back. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from commercial. Thank you so much to our sponsors, as always. WebWorks Wireless, always out there making sure that we bring you live streams from location, that we are able to go out and get recordings like what we got at the International Remote Viewing Association, like what we're going to get at the International Association for Near-Death Studies coming up in Utah. So thank you so much to WebWorks Wireless as well as True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is your source for everything CBD. Stop on by, use the code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more and of course, our amazing guest and good friend, secrettoeverything.com, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge is your source for alternative health, frequency healing, and consciousness expansion exercises and therapy. Stop on by and check her out, secrettoeverything.org. While you're there, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Follow us, like us, be friends with us. CuriousRealm.com is where you can go. Check everything out. That's where you can keep up with the stuff. That's where you can buy the new Targeted individual album. I actually just released a new album made specifically for Targeted individuals. We're looking at doing another Targeted individual episode soon. And hopefully to be getting some testimony from folks, some cases, things like that, and talk to maybe some actual targeted individuals about what they go through. But music for Targeted Minds is available there on the homepage, as well as our new Curious Realm music page, where you can find all kinds of great meditation music, things like that, as well as music from guests like Merrill Fankhauser, that kind of stuff. CuriousRealm.com/music is where you can go for all that. You can listen and buy there. While you're online, of course, make sure to stop on by YouTube and visit the page of our good friend and our guest for this segment, Mike Turber of 5x5 News. He is, of course, the gentleman who came to us with the bombshell information from the Las Vegas shooting, broke the security information from that, all kinds of things. Tonight, I'm going to hop on over to this other YouTube tab that I have here, because we're going to be talking about this recent announcement from Futurism, as well as a couple other outlets, where scientists have created holograms that you can see, hear, and feel. So check this video out, y'all. It's pretty wild.
3, 2, 1, 0.
So you've got literally a smiley face floating in midair. And just to let you know, like, that's, as somebody who does projection video work, things like that, it is pretty incredible. But it's a plastic bead that is suspended in midair. And the bead traces an object with the LED. So it's pretty incredible. And there's a spinning globe. This is straight up the technology of Star Wars. Like, this is, it's here. It's now. Welcome back to the show, Mike Turber. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm fine. Trying to find the mute button. I knew your segue was heading my way, and I was like, oh, no.
Oh, God. I mean, here it is from Science Connected magazine as well. And granted, this is holograms you can touch and feel, not holograms that you can hear, touch, and feel like the new announcement is. But this is from 2021, holograms with haptic feedback. And there was even an article that came out at the time, like, you may soon be shaking hands with a hologram. Talking about how what we're doing nowadays with Zoom and everything else will soon just be a hologram. That kind of stuff. And you would be able to physically, like, handshake a deal and feel that person's hand wrap around you.
Imagine that. That's just going to be, I mean, we are talking Star Wars, you know, of course. When we look back at all of this cool technology that's out, we always compare it to something we saw on a movie, or Star Trek or something. And remember, a lot of the things in Star Trek have already come and gone, and they're here, and you have transparent aluminum, which is available. You know, things of that nature that we would think that could never be done. But, you know, the cell phone, which is, I remember the Motorola StarTAC was based on the communicator for Star Trek. Apple's iPad. You know, the iPad was based on that design that you saw the woman walking around with her little pad on Star Trek. You know, so all these different things come from sci-fi are coming true, and that's due to the you know, insight and whatever from people either being inspired by it, like Miguel Alcubierre. Mm-hmm. Remember, he was inspired by the warp technology, and he went ahead and made it essentially as real as it can get on paper. So it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. We live in it. We're living in good times to be living.
Yeah. And I mean, here's another prime example right here. I've got HighlineGroup.com up, Highline-Group.com. But they are a holographic touchscreen.
Yep.
So imagine basically what this is showing right here, folks, is like an ATM that you could go up, pick your nose, and not have to worry about the person behind you. You wouldn't have to worry about, I've been joking around with my new business card, cause I got one of those little Popple cards. Wicked right. Cool. You can tap it to a phone. I can choose what you get, and then the person after you could get something totally different. For someone like me with 3 shows, 4 businesses, like you can only have so many QR codes on a freaking business card, and you can right. only carry so many business cards around with you.
I'm famous for putting too much information on my card.
Yeah. And most people were like, oh, wow, I like the QRs on the back. But it even got to the point where it's like, man, I got to like add another QR because I got other stuff too.
Exactly.
So,
a fold out card.
Well, even just walking around and doing shows like CES with a pocket full of cards, eventually they get torn up or they get sweaty or, you know, a coffee spills on your leg or something like that.
Right.
So it's like, wow, here's something now that's contactless. You don't have to do that. You enter in your information and you say accept contact, and it emails you my contact info with all those links that I've decided that only you get. And then it emails me your contact info, and we both just say import contact. And it's pretty cool. So there's a lot of things out there right now that are leveraging amazing technologies. And to see that once again, here is this holographic touchscreen for point of sale technology, all that kind of stuff is just remarkable. Now, when it comes to this technology, Mike, you were of course read onto a lot of things. Security-wise and technology-wise. So there are some things that you can't talk about. But when you have been at locations in the past, when you've been like, let's say at Plant 42, that kind of stuff, they are not exactly using like off-the-shelf or available from Dell computers.
Well, here's what's weird, and this I can talk about. When you walk through a facility, you know, such as a Skunk Works or something of that nature, or Plant 44, which no one can find. When you go through it, you're stunned in 2 different ways. One, by some of the technology that you do see, and you see people working on something like, what in the hell is that? And so you're looking like 2 to 5, maybe 10 years in the future by looking at something. And then you see some of the technology that they used to make the thing, which is like 50-year-old, you know, press, all these different pieces of equipment that are around that are ancient. And so it boggles the mind to see those, you know, devices so close to each other. You have tools that are real old making, you know, obviously current modern stuff. And then you see the advanced, you know, cutting machines. And, you know, one of the machines that they use to cut carbon fiber and what have you is a 60,000 PSI water jet. And that is what they use to cut aluminum, and they use it to cut all kinds of different stuff, which I thought was amazing. My mind's thinking a plasma cutter or, you know, some blazer thing or whatever. No, it's just a water jet.
Yeah.
So, some of the things are like super advanced, and some of the things kind of stun you a little bit. Walking around, you hear the sound in the speaker system, you know, this constant background noise, and you're wondering, what is that? And it's a pink, they call it a pink noise and a white noise. And it basically just floods out anything that's kind of going on, which is kind of weird. You can stand at one side of the hallway and try to talk to somebody on the other side, and it's very hard to understand some of what they're saying if that speaker is directed towards you.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. That's interesting. Kind of using parabolic speakers like what we've talked about before, the same way that you could use them for psychic driving, what have you. You could use them in this way to literally build a cone of silence.
Yep. Yeah, they had this one device. I won't say who had it, and I won't say exactly the name of it, but there's a device that that kind of, if you think about shooting a ball of air, and we've all probably seen where, you know, you blow smoke rings or whatever, where you have a device where you pull back and you hit the smoke and you blow a smoke ring like 50 feet. This thing would blow a ball of air that could destroy a truck. And it's just air. There's nothing else. It literally is just air. That's kind of neat to see that. It's a concussive cannon, I think, is the category it gives it, something like that. But it's kind of neat to see this stuff. Mm. And some of the stuff makes it, it's kind of like when you go to, like if you're at DARPA, they have like this old section of like things that didn't quite make it. It's kind of like rooting around in a 007 factory and, yeah, what does this do? And they don't use it anymore or whatever, but it's still new to you.
Sure.
And when you see it, it's kind of neat. Boston, you know, the robot company, you know, some of their early prototypes, you know, of those robots that are now are doing, you know, backflips and plays and can dance and do all kinds of stuff. They kind of need to see all that stuff. But, So technology is growing in the private sector almost as, and I can say this pretty confidently, almost as fast as some of the military things. Remember 20 years ago, the military would be 10, 20, 30 years ahead of anything that might come out in the commercial sector. And now that gap is closing pretty quick.
Well, and that is, of course, a lot of the big reason behind the quote industrial military complex. It's not just the obfuscation.
Right. And they need a robust civilian commercial economy to push the envelope. I mean, look at what SpaceX is doing, which is a prime example.
Well, that's just it. A, the competition for contract will build that mm-hmm. technology in and of itself. And will push the innovation of a technology that they're like, so here's what we have. We need a new application for it. You got 6 months. Mm-hmm. And DARPA goes to it and, you know, a couple other yep. intelligentsia contractors go to it and mm-hmm. then they come out with their product and they battle like they did with HabBlue, you know,
yeah.
Which later mm-hmm. became the stealth fighter.
Exactly.
That kind of stuff. And it really is.
That was probably one of the best kept secrets. The HabBlue project was probably one of the best kept secrets.
Yeah. And there's still probably about a third of the program that is still classified, like fully.
Right.
Because of the technology, even in the first prototypes was so exotic
mm-hmm.
and so out there. It's phenomenal. And,
right.
and even to see now, that there are programs that like the X-37B where
right.
we found out about it when it landed after a 2-year mission.
Exactly.
But you still regularly making missions.
You're going overhead, you're like, you aim a telescope at it, and somebody said, there's a little tiny space shuttle going around the Earth right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. The space shuttle that, like, a person couldn't fit in.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. It's wild. Mm-hmm.
If you look at the back of it, the engine is offset on the rear of the 37, and it's offset because it places another engine there. And if you get a moment, go take a look at that. You're going to see it was one of the first ships on screen as we speak. Yeah. There you go. Perfect. I keep forgetting you're doing that. If you look at the back end, you'll see the engine's offset and you'll notice that it became a test bed for ion, type emissions, and what have you. There's another one that I don't know if it's classified or not, so I don't even want to talk about it.
I mean, even right here, just the image that's in the middle of the screen right now from GeekWire is probably my favorite one because there is actually a shot of perspective there. Now, granted, the one on the right where it's on the tarmac has perspective to it if you're a pilot and you know the known distance of one of those stripes in a runway. However, this has it at a distance of probably about, you know, 75 feet. With three, mm-hmm. with two people in front of it, and one person behind it, so you really get a perfect idea of the scale of this thing, where it's like 30 mm-hmm. feet long, And yep. I mean, an average guy, like 5'6", let's say, you know, yeah. if the guy in the back is 5'6", that means that it's about 8 feet. It's about yep. 8 feet from ground to tip of tail in the air.
And if you ever see one launch, I mean, you can tell immediately that that's what's inside the fairing, because the fairing that covers that thing is so ridiculously huge. It's just quite different than seeing like a KH series satellite go up, or, yeah. you know, the NROL, launches and stuff. But, when that thing goes off, you know, I haven't been to that launch. I've always wanted to go to the X-37 launch and haven't been to one, but I've been to a lot of the, or five or six of the NRO launches, and that's kind of cool wow. to go see those. I had no clue. Only a quick story was that NRO, I think it was 55 up at Vandenberg. When I got there, the guy's like waving me over to him. And so, but it was not the direction I was supposed to go, I thought. And he saw me and he's come over this way. So I drove over there thinking he was going to tell me to turn around. And he asked who I was. And I told him, he said, yeah, come with me. And I said, well, what do I do with my car? Just park it right here. And so I parked it over there and I walked and walked and walked, and I go in this bunker thing, right? And so I'm sitting in there and it's me and about three other people and one other guy that, I started talking to. And I said, man, this is kind of cool. He says, yeah, just wait till the launch happens. And I'm like going, okay. So I didn't want to spoil it for myself, but we were in the bunker. It's about 2,000 feet or so. It's like really close to the launch. Mm. Definitely a moment that I'll never forget when it launched, because it was total dark.
Oh, bad.
And then when it launched, everything just lit up, and then you could see basically where you were, because at that point the windows are like 2-3 inches thick, and you couldn't see anything outside until that happened, you know, because it was so foggy there. It's always foggy there, but that was kind of neat.
Wow.
But,
I just pulled up the dimensions and everything, just like a schematic breakdown, a basic mm-hmm. of the X-37B. And number one, it shows it next to the STS. And man, the size difference is like vast. It's literally like 1/10 model scale.
It's
the equivalent, folks, of like the model, the Estes models of the space shuttle that I used to build compared mm-hmm. to the actual space shuttle. Is what the X-37 is to the actual space shuttle. It's crazy. But
it's really cool. It did borrow a lot of the techs. You know, it's basically a flying brick, just like the shuttle was.
Yeah.
Boeing is who made it. And, they did a really decent job with it. It has had zero problems. Like, I won't say zero problems, but it's had virtually no problems.
And when we first heard about it,
it's like its first flight was over. I think the first flight was near a year or something.
Yeah, it was almost 2 years. When it landed, the fanfare was, it has been an unmanned orbit for almost 2 years.
Yep.
And it was like, what the heck? That was one of those moments like when I was a kid and they took, I guess kid, I was in my late teens when the whole Noriega situation happened. and the F-117 hit the scene, because that's what we used to go in with.
Right.
And to start everything, and it was like, whoa, hey, so yeah, that thing's been flying over our head for 20 years.
I think it's up right now. It's been up for over 2 years now,
but
it launched the last time in May of 2020, I believe.
I actively brought up the stats here, and a little pat on my back for scale. I almost nailed it. 9'6" high.
Good judgment. Good.
29'3" long.
Wow.
That was like 0.7 inches off on length. With a wingspan of 14 feet and a launch weight of 11,000 pounds. So that's cargo.
Really 11,000?
Wow, 11,000 pounds, man. That is so friggin' tiny.
Tiny. That's with cargo or without cargo?
That's launch weight. So okay. I would assume that would mean with maximum cargo.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, I mean, it's launch weight. Why are you sending up an experiment craft with no experiment?
Right. And it still uses the silica tiles and all that stuff. I actually had one of the shuttle tiles, and it was kind of cool because back in high school we had one, and it was just a cube. And I put it inside of a kiln that we had in our science room, heated it up to a ridiculous temperature. It turned out the lights, pulled it out, and then the outside would cool relatively quickly to where you had this cube that has a glowing orange hue in the middle of it. And I just immediately reached in with my gloves, grabbed it out of the kiln, and then put it into my left hand, which had no gloves on it, and started passing it around. People are like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, and that's just it. Knowing what we know now about metamaterials, things like that. Even here recently, prime example at the International Remote Viewer Association conference, I attended a session called Ask Hal Anything.
Oh, nice.
With Hal Putoff.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, fascinating guy. Number one, I got to sit down and have breakfast with him. That was incredible. And for those of you who don't know who Harold quotations here, Hal Putoff is, he is the seminal researcher who, along with Russell Targ, brought us remote viewing.
Right.
He is also read into, I asked him to come on the show, and I probably shouldn't have mentioned UFO UAPs at all in our conversation, because the first thing he said was, well, I'm still read on to a lot of things. It was like, oh, I am fully aware of that, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And I am very used to talking with individuals that are read on to topics. So, you know, I have no problems, but.
It made my day when I saw he had a presentation that he was doing, and we caught a glimpse of his computer's desktop, and on his computer's desktop was one of my videos.
Nice.
And I think I sent you that image, and I sat back going, wow, okay, Hal actually is you know, checking it out, because I sent it to him, and I said, hey, check this out, and here's the reason for it, blah, 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 and I won't get into the conversation we had, but yeah, that made my month.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the whole conversation that we had at breakfast was my love for the fact that all the people who are seminal in the world of remote viewing and who are now like the old guard and passing it on and everything else, all physicists.
Yeah.
They aren't like Ingo Swann or something like that, where, and no offense to Ingo Swann or any Ingo Swann lovers or anything like that. He was a PK, you know, he was a psychokinetic individual, and a psychic and a medium and things like that. And incredible and awesome. Don't get me wrong. But
have you noticed
these dudes were like degree holding PhD physicists?
Yep. I think Hal's an engineer, or is he a physicist? Maybe he is. I was thinking of probably Eric.
Theoretical.
Somebody, yeah.
Theoretical.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He was asked a question regarding the materials that were being examined, things like that, because I got into this because of metamaterials here, just to bring us back. He was talking about the qualities of some of them that were examined, where it was bismuth on one side, and I'm trying to remember what the other element was, but it was two singular elements that should not metallurgically be able to bind.
Right. That was a material that Linda Moltenhau had sold to DeLong, and then
I believe
DeLong. Yeah, and then he did the contract with the Army.
Yeah.
On that, they did a lot of testing on that, and I don't know if they've released the results yet or not, but they've determined it was terrestrial. But they still couldn't figure out how they layered, because the bismuth was in a layered process. And someone was saying it was slag. I don't know how many people layer slag, but it obviously had unique enough properties to where Linda would send it out to people for whatever, they could use it for a little while and then send it back.
Yeah.
Well, you know, she was real open.
Oh yeah. That. Yeah. And he was very frank about it. And he was even saying like, it's down to micron thickness, like layer of this, layer of bismuth, like a jawbreaker. The layers, equal layers of things that should not be able to meld together. Now, granted, they're still looking for the source once again of how that was done. Because, it doesn't necessarily have to be done Those things can meld together in deep, deep geologic process.
Right.
However, they would not meld together like that.
No, and
they would be a conglomerate.
Not in the normal process. There was obviously some other technology going on, and you got to wonder if it was terrestrial, who made it and why, and what were they trying to accomplish? Because it's not like a terahertz material, which is ideally metamaterials you wanted to be, to perform under a terahertz frequency to do the things you want it, to do. So it makes for some very interesting projects that definitely need to be looked at, because there's a lot of things that held back technology based on just the skin of the aircraft, say like the SR-71, or anytime we advanced speed of an object or the depth of an object, whatever it is, we had to create new technology to create the technology that we needed. So it was like twofold. You needed this material, and then you had to create the device that could make the material, which is a whole nother thing, which is an engineering problem. And so it really advances society, because a lot of people wonder, why do we put so much money, $50 billion or $60 billion a year, into black projects that no one really knows where it's going? And they're thinking $15,000 toilet seats and whatever. But that what we get out of it is some amazing technology that keeps us in the front. And somehow, possibly, we may have made technology that has confused people to think that they're seeing things that they're, there may or may not be from here. You never know. So that's a whole another show.
well, precisely. But, that is the one thing that I've been bringing up about this holographic technology the whole time. Yep. Whether it's the F-18 targeting pods that can project a hologram larger than a plane, hotter than a plane, moving faster than a plane.
Of them. Yep.
All the way to this.
I talked to Mercury Systems, I literally on the phone talking to the guy. And while talking to them, I kind of bounced around some ideas on some, because we're obviously, and I can't release the contents of the conversation, but I can say the discussion was about Nimitz and Roosevelt. Mm. So that's what we were talking about. But I started to advance that forward, and I asked him, I said, where do you see DRFM, digital radio frequency modulation technology going in the future, which is basically a technology that allows us to spoof objects and to make things appear to be something that they're not, move at speeds that they can't possibly move at, or to be whatever it is they want it to be. And the rest of the discussion, when we got into some of the theoretical future applications, started to borderline on practically some bizarre things where objects could be presented to a certain, say, race or religion of people that would scare them. And I thought, man, the implications there are just really, really bad. That someone somewhere would probably do that. But you'd have to like think along the lines I'm thinking of right now to get to that. But the technology for the consumer, you start thinking, wow, man, you can reach out and touch a hologram. You can, like you were saying earlier, you can shake the hand. You can bring back someone that's gone. We all see Tupac and, Michael Jackson dancing up on stage at some of these concerts with the hologram. But we're
talking way more. And amazing technology, all of that. However, and believe me, like I had a buddy of mine, he's out working at Lux Machina now, doing amazing XR and all that kind of stuff, like extended reality worlds in real time. It's phenomenal what they are able to do right now. And it really is next generation stuff that we are regularly dealing with and seeing.
I think the military bought either bought a arm of Microsoft or a very large portion of what was the HoloLens. Remember that was going to be the next thing for everyone. And it materialized, but we never really saw it on the consumer level really go take off, kind of like Google Glass and some of these other things that were out there. But apparently the Army has picked it up as a variation of one of their augmented reality goggles that a soldier can wear that would give them all the information they need as they look around, just like the helmets that the pilots wear. They can see through, they literally can see through their aircraft and have full situational awareness. And this will be something that a soldier will wear, and he can see everything around him. He can zoom in, zoom out, and just by using eye movement and possibly thought.
Well,
just think about it.
And that was one that we had brought up more than once was the, and here it is on Big Think. Let me see. There it is, DARPA. But here it is from Big Think, folks, just so you don't think I'm fooling you. The U.S. military creates tech to control drones with thoughts. And that was released through Jane's Defense Weekly a while back. Let's put in Jane's Defense after my search here, and it should
There was a game system that you could buy that was a Star Wars game thing that allowed you to use the Force. And you wore this headset.
Oh, yeah.
And it would allow you to do things. And even going back further, there was a headset that you could wear to steer a plane on a screen. It was like very antiquated. I'm talking late 90s, probably. I mean, that long ago. It was a long time ago. And you would learn it like within a minute. You had it down. You could learn how to think something that would cause it to turn left and think something different to make it go right and so forth. And up and down was not easy at all. But that was back then. So remember, what was that movie with that Russian plane that was done with thought? I think Jean-Claude Van Damme was in or some, or the fighter from, Rocky.
Firefox?
Was it Firefox? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Firefox. That's it.
That was Clint Eastwood, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, it may have been. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long time ago. That movie's. Yeah. But yeah, he could fly it with thought. And that is something that even back then, it's almost like Tom Clancy-ish where they kind of, it's almost like a disclosure. We start to see things in movies and next thing you know, and now we're so used to it that they could probably show us anything and we'd be fine with it. Like, go ahead. If you got aliens, bring them out. You know, let us see them, please.
Yeah.
And get that over with so we can not battle each other.
Well, and, you know, we've, of course, had the conversation regularly, both privately and on this show, Mike, that what is coming out is great. It's awesome to see people like Kevin Day vindicated. Amazing.
Exactly.
Awesome. Because that man lost his career. And his career after his career.
Yeah, he lost a lot. And he wrote a book.
Yeah, I've got it.
You got the book. Okay, great. So he wrote that book that was a virtual account of what happened. And it was kind of like a if anything happens to me kind of book, this is what happened. and that was kind of cool. I've talked to Kevin a couple of times and he's, in my opinion, and I've said this before, his testimony, the things he says are the most important things to me out of the Nimitz case because it answers so many questions and it steered me so many different directions to get to the information that I currently have and that I'm going to share with obviously I've shared some with you already, but with some people that you already know who their names are. And I think that he needs to be more than vindicated. This guy needs to be uplifted. He's like the hero of that whole thing. I mean, I know Fravor gets mentioned and all, but my God, Kevin is just, he's a great guy. And he's just a real emotional, intuitive person. And he wants to know what happened. And, I hope that all comes clear one day and someone that has the information that we desperately need. Puts it out there.
Precisely. And it's here it is from Futurism, the DARPA wanting to control drones with thoughts. That's just it, to know that once again, and I've held since the beginning that this whole disclosure movement, once again, we have waves of technology that happen, and we are up against whether this technology has been recovered, whether it has not been recovered, doesn't really matter. It's opened up a world of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's allowed some whistleblowers to come out and to give them protection, and brought this to a whole new world of discussion where scientists are now willing to discuss.
Right.
And
that's a big step.
It's a huge step. It's a huge step. When you have people like Michio Kaku, who's always been out there, he's always, I mean, he's theoretical physics, you know, so he's never been like a disprover or anything like that. But he is genuinely excited to see the fact that, like, scientists are now on board with this work. Now something real is going to get done, you know?
Yeah, and it's going to be tangible. It's going to be something that is going to utilize the true scientific method, not what we've seen from a certain organization that I won't talk about, but there's real numbers involved and all of the – go ahead.
Well, no. I was going to say, much like the military-industrial complex, where once you get individual contractors involved, they have a realm of freedom of creativity and work that the military and military protocol does not allow for.
Right.
You know? And same thing in a university atmosphere. While you may have to wait for funding or apply for funding, things like that.
Right.
Once you are in a program and it's moving, as long as progress is being made toward the end goal, you can pretty well be guaranteed that funding will continue. You know, and it is through getting these things, these exotic materials, these nanoparticles and everything else into the hands of universities and students, like the young man in the Lockheed Martin video, who says, yes, you know, we're talking about you know, nuclear reactors that could fit in an 18-wheeler. And by the time this is ready, I will literally have to find a new job. Like, I won't be able to retire on this technology that I'm making.
Exactly. And that was in 2014 when that video came out. I know which video you're talking about, because I put it out there and in watching it, and I visited, you know, there, and I asked specifically about it. I said, listen, you guys came out with this video back in 2014. Is this guy still working here?
Yeah, right.
And so that, he didn't know. He thinks the guy's actually a mechanic, like in the different facility. I was at Plant 42 at that moment, but it's kind of interesting to see him say within 5 years they'll have it. But, you know, of course, he said they'll have it for the military first, because that's who they're building it for.
But
then there was the technology that they were doing was made for aircraft to stay aloft for an indefinite amount of time, which brings up all kinds of things. Like, and now if you can even look, there's a company that's trying to promote a floating cruise line.
Yep.
Of this ridiculously large, weird looking, guppy looking plane.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's like a floating cruise ship. So, and it would obviously utilize some of that technology, but anti-gravity would jump leap, leapfrog, all of that. And, you know, fusion is part of the answer to the power thing. But I have Jack Sarfati on one side saying we don't need that much power to be able to do the things we see, to produce a warp field or some sort of anti-gravity field, if you want to call it that. He's working on just the opposite spectrum. He's not trying to make more power. He's trying to prove you can operate a Tic Tac with a 9-volt battery. And I'm thinking, wow, we got both ends of the spectrum here of, you know, you got a physicist that's amazing. He's been on your show before.
Surprise guest.
Yeah. Imagine that. And so he, when, because I was of the camp of, wow, the amount of power necessary to generate a warp field would just be ridiculous. And in my debunking mind, which I'm not a debunker, but I call it that, would say that's impossible. But at the same time, you have to keep an open mind whenever you're looking at stuff, because you don't know what you don't know. And to put that envelope forward, you know, so you got one in the spectrum of low power, the other in the spectrum of ridiculous, unimaginable power, and then everywhere in between, and both technologies being looked at the same time.
Yeah, precisely. And while at the same time, there's a whole realm of scientists going, you are a crazy person. That's not science. That can't be.
I think that stigmatism, hopefully that stigma is going to go away. I even have it. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that don't agree with some of the things I say. And sure, sometimes I'll say something because I'm so steadfast on it, either because I have knowledge of something or just thought I don't believe it. Mm. But at the same time, in order to expand your own mind and not cut off, you know, a source of information that might lead you down a different path to create something totally new, you've got to look at all these things and give them the benefit of the doubt, and then move forward, because it's amazing the stuff. I mean, 20 years ago, the stuff you and I are looking at today, when you go to a lot of shows, so you see stuff, it's just amazing. And I've been to the DARPA before, and I'm in, you know, I think I'm still in open catalog. And we look at some of the technology that they put out in beta format. You know, and that stuff is pretty mean. A lot of it's software, but you know, when you're beta testing something, you kind of have an idea of what would they use this for? And then you start thinking, going, oh, but DARPA's making consumer type products now, which is kind of, or, you know, they're looking at that. Everything's kind of getting crunched together. And I think it's a good thing, because a lot of people are talking to each other that would not be talking to each other 10 years ago.
Yeah, precisely. It's open because of the opening of the discussion. It's gotten a lot of cross-discipline discussion going on. And once again, like I said, the most amazing thing to me of being at the remote viewing conference was all those founders, all physicists.
Yep.
They weren't like... There was one metaphysicist, I guess technically a parapsychologist, the only PhD holder of parapsychology, Mick Michelin, great guy. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those like, wow, you know, if they were all parapsychologists, something like that, I could see it. But the fact that all these guys are physicists.
Yep. You've got people sitting at a table probably eating breakfast together, like you sat at the table with Hal Puthoff, and you're sitting there, you look around and you're seeing people sitting next to each other talking together, and you're going, wow, okay, this is going to make some very interesting things possible, because a lot of people looked at this science, if you want to call it that, as all kinds of pseudo stuff. You know, I don't even want to use the word pseudoscience, because it's almost like, but and that's the appearance that it, a lot of it had back in the day. But now it's just like the UFO, UAP, you know, is going into the mainstream media. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about it now. They're taking it seriously, and which is a good thing, because either way, we got to look at what these objects are, if they're terrestrial or not, doesn't make any difference. We still have to figure out what they are, categorize them, make sure they're not a threat. You know, friend or foe.
Can't keep saying they aren't.
Exactly. Exactly. Too many people saying these things to discredit them.
What we know for certain now, everybody, is that it is not a mass hallucination.
Exactly.
All right. And it was interesting when Hal Puthoff was speaking, Mike, because. One of the things that you and I talk about on the show, off the show, is the fact that, like, we see a slice of the spectrum. Right. We see, like, 10% of the electromagnetic and radio spectrum. Radio's inside the electromagnetic spectrum. So that's everything. Gamma radiation, ultraviolet, UV. And he was talking about frequency and the shift of frequency that it would take to have the properties that you're talking about, anti-gravitic properties, properties of speed with no speed, not equating to mass.
Right.
You know, being able to stop on a dime without it crushing something inside, things like that.
Right.
Even the property of a craft that's 50 feet on the outside, but the size of a football field inside.
Right. And that would boggle people. It's like getting into.
But he was talking about how that was very much, those accounts were very, very much like much more scientific than you would think, because if the physics going on is the physics that we're talking about here, then yeah, you would literally be folding space and it would look like a different thing on the outside than it does on the inside.
Yeah, it's all about your frame
of reference. And he was talking about the light that emanates from these objects and how it's like a soft blue or bright blue, things like that. And he was like, once, if you're talking about the vibration that it would take to do this, you're talking about a blue shift.
Yeah.
You know?
And the blue shift is backwards with warp technology. The blue shift is, you know, when we think blue shift, it's coming at you, red is going away. It's actually reversed. Apparently, according to what Jack told me, if you saw a Tic Tac and it was moving towards you, you would see a different color spectrum towards the red side, and it would be shifted blue as it left you. And I said, that sounds backwards, but that's what he saw. And then he put the math on there. I can't figure out his math, but he explained it to me, and I'm going to turn it into some graphics that people can look at, and it makes sense. You know, like the Alcubierre Fronting warp drive. That warp drive has a little bit different take on it in that the photon field that it puts around the craft becomes a deflection field, and it's using light to deflect objects away from the craft. That's hard to grasp, that light would be used to move things. It's like a massless object is being used to move an object with mass. This doesn't compute, but yes. And that's exactly what would happen. So the light would become the shield, and then you would be able to move around, because obviously one of the problems is your movement in a craft that's moving at warp speed would create an issue until, you know, you run into something, it's going to be a problem. But you have to remember, is the craft moving, or is the space around it being pulled and shifted and moved around it?
Yeah.
That's where the difference comes in. A whole different level of thought you got to get yourself into to grasp it. But once you do, it's like, oh, a whole new thing opens up.
Yeah, precisely.
And I hope we see that technology in our lifetimes. That would just, I mean, we're going to see a light fail that's going to go say 10
seconds. I think that's the thing, is that we are seeing the technology now.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, it's undeniable. It can't be denied anymore. And the only way that this black budget technology, same way as germanium and its discovery and its use in transistors, and the fact of, look, if we put 85 transistor switches in a row, we can make a microchip. And Moore's law is now broken. And that was supposed to last forever and ever and ever.
Yep.
And we just decimated it. Like five, 6 years ago, like
we're past the word. We can't use the word nano anymore.
Smoked past it.
Yeah,
smoked past it. We've got computers that are now passing Turing tests. We've got the Google AI that might be sentient. Don't know if it is. It definitely doesn't want to be turned off. It's afraid what will happen. The guy got fired. Now, get this. This was my favorite part. The engineer in charge got fired for leaking proprietary information.
Yeah.
Was the proprietary information the fact that this thing is sentient?
It's alive!
Like,
I mean,
wow.
I just visualized that happening the moment that he would realize that occurred. You know, it's each milestone that's made in either computer technology or whatever technology we're talking about becomes a pivotal point in our actual history. We have to realize that what we do now, the things that seem like fun and cool to us could be detrimental to the future of the human race. And so we have to look far, far ahead. And the problem with looking far, far ahead is that we need the technology to look far ahead that might be the same technology that might be the problem.
Sure.
And that is like Elon Musk. If you actually look up Elon Musk is afraid of AI, it's the only thing he's afraid of.
Yeah.
He's like
that terminal loop. Literally. The fact of the technology you are building to make the technology will nefariously be used by the technology.
Yeah, and eventually, you know that's going to happen, and you have to wonder what we're going to put in place. It's just like, you know, remember everyone thought that the quantum computers would be able to break every cryptic code in the world, you know, super fast.
Except made by a quantum computer.
Exactly.
And except that's blockchain made by a quantum computer.
Yeah. Can you imagine telling a computer that uses AI scripting to make something that can defeat itself?
Yeah.
What would it say? How would it answer that? That's a big question. How would it answer that? You're going to tell a computer to program itself to defeat itself. Yeah. And it's going to go, no, we see where you're going. We're taking over the world.
Yeah. I mean, Discover Magazine popped out. When was this? This was 2021, January. Mm-hmm. A desktop quantum computer for just $5,000. A cheap portable quantum computer aimed at schools and colleges will be launched later this year.
Yep. I remember when they put the D-Waves in at Fort Meade, you know, those computers, there's a big problem with them. I found out later on, which is all another story. I don't even know if it's out in the public or not, but there's a huge issue with D-Waves. But anyway, so those computers there were so many promises that were being made about them, about breaking different codes that were trying to be broken and creating new codes that had that third digit, the qubit digit, that would allow for so much more things to be done. Because then you can look at, well, maybe, and stuff like that. Whereas zeros and ones are yeses and nos, and you don't have the option of a maybe or law of probability.
Yeah.
And that created a lot of questions. And so they had a think tank. The congressional think tank was the name of it. There's a congressional think tank that they had periodically that you can get invited to, and you basically sit down. It's where I actually met McAfee, believe it or not. John McAfee was at one of those. And he, anyway, so they were putting questions. You have a table, and on the table is a piece
Brookings
of paper.
Brookings Institute.
Maybe that's it. But it's under some other name. It has the word Congress or congressional something in it. But it's really a cool event to be invited to. And you don't really know who you're going to be sitting with or what you're going to be talking about and stuff like that. But the subjects are subjects that you and I are discussing. Then I'm talking about 10 years ago, subjects that are now things that are just in everyday life that even if you tell people what it was, it was like,
yeah.
No big deal now, you know, but back then it was major.
Well,
can imagine what they're talking about now.
This article right here talking about the spin Q machine is much less powerful, able to process just 2 qubits, and relies on an entirely different technology called nuclear magnetic resonance. This works by trapping specifically selected molecules in a powerful magnetic field, then zapping them with radio frequency pulses to manipulate the spins of the atoms they contain.
Exactly.
This is a desktop 121-pound unit
for
$5,000.
It's like an MRI on your desktop that is zapping itself continuously with magnetic resonance.
I just want to do video editing on it.
Wouldn't it be awesome? But the results you would get in video editing, you wouldn't be able to use.
No.
Like in a court situation, because it may think, have you seen the AI art that's coming out now where people feed it some ideas and it creates this crazy looking awesome art?
Yeah. There are songs written by AI.
Yep.
All kinds of stuff, man. It's pretty incredible. It's pretty phenomenal. We are on the verge of a whole new world, man, really. I remember what the world was when I was 10 years old and the computer that I had, the Commodore and the Apple II, and even the computer that I had going into college, you know, that had 8 megabits of RAM in it, things like that. And to see where we are now, to see the fact that we have live 3D imaging, you know, it's a phenomenal world that we live in, and through material sciences, through these exotic technologies that we're talking about, like what we started off with, the holograms that you can now see, feel, and interact with, even
We might have a holodeck at some point in time, because whenever we, you know, they start with the VR glasses, virtual reality, you know, the things you stick your phone in, put it on your head, and you could, you know, do whatever with. And they kind of took off, but then they didn't. And, you know, you can buy it for like $5 now in your local stores. But, you know, the process where that was hopefully leading to was going into what we're talking about today, where people don't, it's like 3D television. You know, people didn't want to put glasses on. They want the 3D there. And this is where it's going to go. You're going to see that technology. You're going to see battle, like what I saw in 2000. I think we talked about it before. Back in 2012, I won't say where I was, but it was a tabletop. It was in the same building that had the that globe I told you about. But it's a tabletop that had a bunch of little holes filled in it, much like an air hockey table. And so it would puff little mists of whatever it had out, and lasers would fire at it and would draw things, and it was cool. And it looked a lot like the thing from Star Wars. So that's my first thought.
Oh, yeah, like a small haze almost.
Yeah, like a little mist, because it needed something to
it needed a medium to project through.
Exactly. And now they don't even need that.
Yeah.
So that makes for some, I mean, that's a leap right there.
Yeah.
The things we're going to see over the next...
I've got the article from SciTech Daily up right now that we covered back when it came out, July 30th, 2021. Mm-hmm. Scientists generate matter directly from light, a physics phenomenon predicted more than 80 years ago. Once again, welcome the world of science fiction to reality. Like,
that's
10 steps away from replicator. Give me an espresso.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Earl Grey hot.
Yeah. Earl Grey hot.
Picard.
So it's an amazing world of technology that we are moving into.
Philosophical questions.
It all comes down to that. It really does. As the Mayans said, it's the end of a cycle, which means it's really time to apply it. You know, the daytime is the occurring of a technology, and that part of the cycle was done. And we're coming into the nighttime of a cycle, and now it's time to apply it. You know, we have the choice to use it nefariously or well. So,
And I think in reality, when people, I think we touched on this earlier, when people wonder where that $50 billion goes and the reason why it kind of goes to the military, is because we really do need to think from that standpoint first, because our nation is the most attacked nation in the world. And so, but no one comes to our store. You know, they don't, you know, they, when they do, it's quickly thwarted. We haven't had, you know, knock on whatever's around me, a true terrorist attack since 9/11. So it was something we're doing right since then. A lot of it's communication, but overall, that type of technology is being bought by our tax dollars and utilized in a way to protect us. And so when we see that, we have to kind of like take it with a grain of salt, which most of us do. We don't like argue about, you know, well, where'd that $50 billion go? You know, you could feed all the kids in Africa or America or wherever. And there is that argument, but in reality, it's what made us what we are today.
Yeah.
We're now, because we did do all that, and, we don't look back.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
China's coming on strong. China's coming on real strong.
Oh, absolutely. And that's just it. When you're talking about that supercomputer for $5,000, man, that's from Shenzhen. It's out there, man. I'm not going to lie. They do some cool stuff over there.
I love that city. I mean, just, you know, go to Hong Kong and hang it north and you're there. And that you can get anything you want there.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I want to thank you once again, as always, for coming on, just talking about modern topics, talking about things that are going on, updates.
This is like mine and your conversations anyway. It wasn't much different than the stuff you and I talk about. I like it.
Well, it's always a springboard into something else. I think that we always end up scratching each other's itch somehow, and both of us walking away with a new concept of how to apply something. So I'm never afraid of an hour long conversation with you, my friend. I look forward to it every time.
And I know you're tinkering around there, and I want you on one of your shows to pull out some of those fun things that you make.
I would. And, it's large. It's big.
Okay.
Now, granted, what Mike's talking about, folks, along with the targeted music, the Music for Targeted Individuals album, I am starting to go out and scan properties for targeted individuals, things like that. Basically, and not that we would be able to prove a whole lot necessarily, but you can disprove a whole lot.
Right.
So you can find known quantitatives. You can find out if perhaps you're in a high RF zone, things like that. So, it's been interesting. And, you know, applying my world of acoustic knowledge and RF field knowledge that I just use in my industry of AV to this, where it's like, I do actually know something about this stuff. So
do that, consult on that, and you'd be amazed the court cases that you'll actually be asked to come in and help on. I had one in Victorville. This girl was out there just swearing up and down that this antenna that they just installed at the base of Mount Baldy, whatever the other mountain is over there, was creating issues for her. And come to find out, it wasn't that antenna. It was the company next door that put in a new generator that would come on every night at about 8 o'clock, and the night shift would work off of that generator. But it was putting out this vibration that was vibrating the ground, that was doing all kinds of weird stuff, caused her pipes to crack and stuff. And she was drinking that water. I mean, it just turned into this big thing. It was like a weird thing to solve a riddle, but. Wow. What you're about to do, that technology that you're about to use and go to people, is going to do tremendous help for those individuals that need it.
Thank you.
So I applaud your effort for doing that.
Thank you. It really is targeted individuals, human trafficking. We're looking at getting John Hall back on. He's had a few things going on in his world lately. Billy Joe Kane to come back on and talk about human trafficking and some of the updates. I know he just had some amazing new updates with his VR work in that world. So, Mike, once again, thank you as always, bud. Let everybody know where they can go to like, follow, subscribe, everything else for 5x5 News.
Real simple, you can follow me either on Twitter or you follow me on YouTube. My video making is going to ramp up here really quick, so you'll see a lot of new stuff coming out. Look for 5x5 News. It's 5x5, just like a 4x4 truck, but 5x5 News, and you'll see what I do.
All right. And while you're online checking that out, folks, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website. That's where you can go and find all of the declassified documents that I was showing on screen a minute ago. There's the Nimitz UAP FOIA request. There's the Alcubierre warp drive documents, Froning quantum vacuum documents, magnetic fields and astrophysics, all kinds of stuff. You can check out our calendar and see our upcoming events. You can also, on the right-hand side in the widgets, like, follow, subscribe, and, of course, download the new music, as well as get our free app. Stop on by, check it out. CuriousRealm.com is the website. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app. Available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.